3, 2, 1. We never get to do the clap together.
We only have the clap separately.
I see what you did there, Summer.
I missed it, sorry.
It was a STD joke.
Yeah. venereal disease. Yeah.
All right, let's start the show, shall we?
Yeah.
Here we go. What's good, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm your host, Andrea Renee, joined in studio by Miss Brittany Brombacher.
Hello.
And Miss Christine Steimer.
Hello.
Welcome to the brand new What's Good Games studio, ladies.
Oh my god! I literally do that. I think I hurt my vertebrae. Like, really hurts.
I mean, you are shoving your neck into your spine.
That was a sensation like I've never had before. Anyway, the studio is amazing,
isn't it? Great.
It's so shiny.
YouTube.com/whatsgoodgames.
So this is the very first time that all three of us are recording an episode of the podcast in the studio. If you guys watched or listened to last week's episode, you saw Steimer and I, well, not technically last week's, the week before last week's, because last week was most anticipated games. Saw Steimer and I with a lovely fireplace backdrop.
Yeah. It also took us a while to figure out how to chroma key that thing.
It sure did.
It was really cute. I was really confused at first when I saw the tweet. I got like a little butt hurt for like 5 seconds. I was like, what? They did something in the new studio?
We never would do that without you.
No.
Thank you. But no, it was a really cute idea.
I would have, but Andrea was like, we can't without Brittany. I was like, I guess.
I mean, that sounds right. I'm not even upset about it. I mean, that's the Steimer for you, 100%.
That's me being practical. Ooh, yes, rub my shoulder.
I know, you do have a tight shoulder here. We've been drinking. Let's just preface this with that.
It's true. So in true What's Good Games fashion, because this is our first episode in the new studio altogether, there's probably going to have some kind of technical problem, technical difficulties, audio inconsistencies. It's a work in progress. We did put some soundproofing. It's okay. Soundproofing is incorrect. Acoustic treatment is the correct word for the foam and the installation of things that's happening in this room, but it's not quite where it needs to be. But we're getting there, and we appreciate your patience as we go on this journey together.
Eventually, you'll be able to throw yourself against any wall in the studio and be fine. It will be a padded
like
cell.
Velcro?
No, I mean like it will be a cell.
Oh.
Padded cell.
Mostly. She's not wrong, mostly.
I was mostly making a joke.
Yeah, right over my head. Sorry. I imagine like, you know, those Velcro outfits that people wear.
Oh, yeah.
And then they like bounce themselves. Yeah.
Trampoline onto the thing and human targeting of some kind. I don't remember what they call it.
Now, I think the idea is supposed to a behind the scenes video on Patreon about like all the lights and the, because obviously what people can't see who are watching the video on YouTube is just like the setup.
Oh, yes. We're definitely doing a behind the scenes vlog. So if you guys are not part of our Patreon at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames, we highly encourage you to check it out. We have multiple levels of membership. We did our Patreon exclusive streams just a few days prior to the publishing of this episode. And in those streams was the first time we debuted the full studio to our patrons, but we are doing a full behind the scenes vlog, which you can check out as well. And there's a lot of other cool perks, like you can get an ad-free version of the show, you can get a handwritten postcard, and a bunch of other cool stuff.
And you can also...
Oh, boy.
Oh, get a Patreon shout-out once a month.
That's right. That maybe is a perfect segue, thank you, Steimer, to us talking about what we're doing in the show this week. So because, of course, we're shooting the shows a little off normal recording schedule because of the holidays, we don't have our typical housekeeping that we would do. Instead, this week, we want to make sure that you guys know that the episode is brought to you by patreon.com/whatsgoodgames, mythic patrons, and above. And we have some names that we've got to read for the month of December. Even though technically this episode is posting on January 3rd, please forgive us. I guess technically you get your name read twice in 1 month.
Look at you, Stud Muffins.
It's a 2020 gift to us all.
Exactly. Oh, it's 2020 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think I'm ready.
Nope.
I am. Ready. Get rid of 2019. Check in the bin.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, Simer. 2019 had its highs and lows.
Mostly lows.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a mostly like meh year for me.
That meh's a good word for it.
Mine started out super shit and then just streamed into meh later. Like it got up to meh. I was.
It's an improvement from shit improvement. To meh.
Yeah.
You know, look at the bright side as Brittany is pointing out. We have this now.
We do.
Which is pretty exciting.
This is bumped like up slightly above, right? It's above meh.
Of 2019 going into 2020 is this new awesome studio, which of course is made possible by the folks at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. So shall we just go ahead and start reading these names? Let's go Steimer, Britt, and me, and we'll just go around in a circle.
Cool.
Chewie's godson.
Adriana Rock Williams.
Al Tribesman.
Alberto Andres Videla.
Alex Rigopoulos.
Alex Kohler.
Andrew Cotton.
Ariella Furman.
Bill Stillwell.
Blah, 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 blah.
That was one extra blah, Simon. There's only four
blahs. I'm so sorry.
Many.
Blah, blah,
you are
blah,
so
blah.
So inconsiderate. Brendan Clark.
Brian Harper.
Brian R. Johnson.
Oh, Brian Sweeney.
Wow.
Carl Peterson.
Chris Wilson.
Kristen Lindmark.
Chai Jackson Burgess.
David Ecolucci.
Devin Nitz.
Wait, did you read that?
I just read that.
Donato Sinicio III.
E. Benjamin Shenegas.
Elizabeth Brooke.
Elmo Shell.
Emily Kent.
Ermagerd Aranda. Sorry, did we ever find out if that...
Nope.
Okay.
Ermagerd never wrote in. Ferris Ate.
Gio Corsi.
Gregory Horton.
Ivan Bajarano.
Jacob Ernese.
Jake Sue.
Jared Coomer.
Jared Howard.
Jasmine Lee.
Jason DeMech.
Jessica Bloom.
Joe Cuddison.
Joe Schlieff.
Joe Wilson.
John Drake.
Joe Salbassa.
Justin Foshi.
Justin Foster Teeth.
Kia B.
Kyle Kaiser.
Lucas Shaney.
Marco Antaveros.
Marcus Brown.
Mark Dresstrup.
Martha Emery.
Matthew Goder.
Matthew Simpson.
Melanthius Owens.
Michael S.
Michaela Sage.
Mohammed Mohammed.
Molly Bittner.
Mr. Mathematics.
I love that you picked that name. Nambui.
Nathan Watkins.
Cole Humphrey.
Noel Navarez.
Ozzy Mieha.
Paige Porter.
Patrick Higgins.
Patrick Landry.
Patrick Weller.
Pete Shoemaker.
Pontifex.
Pure Blue Octopus. Blah, blah,
blah. RJ Bryan.
Reagan Impson.
Rob Leaner.
Robert Adams.
Roland Bala.
Ross Haney.
Sean I.
Sian Stevenson.
Stephanie Fitzwilliam.
Sydney Carr.
Tara Bruno.
The Goose Dog 420. Oh, Teresa Ener, just joking. You're
now
right.
We've got the Goose Dog 420 man.
And my friend Throw Seven.
Timothy Bennett.
Tom Bach.
Tony Jay. Thanks, guys.
Trent Berry.
Trent Bennington.
Trevor Starkey.
Tim Monica.
Varun.
William. Wow. Will Cullum. I just combined your name.
Will Hernandez.
Yishun Kajenomai.
Zach Hershey.
Yes.
Oh, that's the last one.
That's the last one.
And Zach Hershey.
Zach Hershey Kiss.
Zach Hershey Kiss.
Thank you to all of our fantastic mythic patrons and above. We love that you guys continue supporting everything we do here at What's Good Games. This episode is for you. And of course, this episode, as we've been teasing for a couple of weeks now, is the What's Good Game Awards 2019. I feel like I should have had like
a little popper or something.
Yeah, in the studio, we could set the new studio on fire.
Yeah. No, actually, great idea. No, let's not do that.
I mean,
no
sparklers.
It would have went viral.
We could have done a shot.
It would have went viral. It would have been great, but that's fine.
It's okay. I can put like fake confetti here. Okay. Boom.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Nobody wants to edit that.
I bought a stock confetti animation.
Fantastic.
You used it for, I think, like our second year. It was great.
I did.
You're great.
I was like, listen, I'm not going to animate that myself. Adobe stock.
Hell
boom.
No.
Boom. Boom. Shakalaka. This is exciting. This is our third award show using the same categories.
Old. Yes.
The third annual What's Good Game Award. So I'm looking at these categories, and this year, the three of us were discussing how different of a landscape for games it is this year than it has been the two previous years, mostly because I think there were no clear AAA standouts that really led the pack as there have been in the past couple of years. We all kind of have very different opinions about what games we really liked and enjoyed this year.
There were good games this year, but there wasn't a game, for me personally at least, that I think will be remembered for the next games of the decade or whatever we talk about. Like, there's going to be almost none of the ones included from this year for me.
Resident Evil 2.
Okay, fine. I mean, for you, yes, but for me, no.
You know, it's always hard, though, when you consider games that came out early in the year, because mm-hmm. so much time passes that you kind of forget that crazy, like, sharp impact. Like, for example, I just finished Horizon Zero Dawn, and that's all I can think about.
Yes,
and that's all
finally!
I know. Oh, so, yeah, if you haven't seen me talk about it on social media, I finally finished it, played Frozen Wilds DLC, loved it so much. I think I finished at like 65 hours or so. I bought a collector's edition for way too much money because I want it in my room.
I love you so much.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, we got that Aloy right behind you. Yeah. The collector's edition Aloy.
So yeah, it's like when I think about, you know, games this year that I loved, I want to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn. Obviously, it's amazing, but I also just finished it. So it's in the front of my mind, whereas mm-hmm. Resident Evil 2, obviously, I love that game, but it's kind of more in the back of my mind.
Here's what I will say, though. Even when that game came out, it came out in like January or February of that year. Mm-hmm. And I still, by the end of that year, I was still like all up that game's butt. I was like, this is the greatest. I love it so much.
100%.
So I think if a game is really good, it can withstand a year of time.
It's been 2 years now, right?
No, yeah.
Because it was up for game I just of meant the year for any 2017. Game yeah.
coming around like of the end of that year.
Yeah. But it's yes. got legs. That's fair. I would say Resident Evil 2 has legs. So you just completely like owned me in my argument.
I did a little bit.
You did. No, you completely did. I wave my flag. I wish I had a little white flag right here. I'd just wave it.
If this is the first time that you are joining us for the What's Good Game Awards,
you're in for a treat.
Oh boy.
Most certainly, because our awards are different than your traditional awards that you get from a lot of other outlets. We like to pick things that are a little off the beaten path to recognize. For example, just a few of the categories we're going to touch on in this episode. Best Friendship, Best Romance, Best NPC, and of course, who can forget the Best Villain? So we are going to have some fun. We might make up a new category as we go. Who knows? We might change categories as we go. Who knows? Mm-hmm. At the very end of the show, we will pick our personal game of the year. And that will hopefully give you guys an idea of kind of where we're at with 2019's landscape of games. So shall we get started? Do you want to just do it in the same order that we yeah. did it last year?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Let's do it. All right. So the category that we started with first was the game of the most sleepless nights. So this category is all about that game that you just could not put down, that you just kept playing and playing. You were supposed to go to bed, but then you didn't go to bed, and boom, now you have to go to work and you're tired and you haven't showered or brushed your teeth, but here you are. So Stimer, what was your game of the most sleepless nights?
It's a game that everyone has probably forgotten even exists or even came out this year, and it was Crackdown.
Crackdown? Really?
Crackdown is
Crackdown 3, right?
Crackdown 3. It is one of those just one more kind of games. So it was very easy for me to just be like, well, I can just go, I just want to go on those, or I can see those orbs, I'll just go get those orbs. Like, it's just one of those things where you easily could fall down that rabbit hole. I don't think this was the best game of the year by any means, but it was definitely a game that kept me up a little bit later, because again, you just get distracted by the orbs. You're like, oh, shiny.
I thought for sure you would say Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem... I didn't stay. I don't remember if I messed up my sleep schedule for it. Maybe I did, but I don't think so because I was traveling a lot when I played that.
See, I got to get all those character ranks, those, you know, friendship ranks up.
I didn't go as crazy with Fire Emblem on, like, I didn't go Persona style. I just played the game and enjoyed it.
So the thing with Fire Emblem, my dear Andrea Renee.
Yes.
You're looking at me like I'm just going to smile and be the best supportive friend possible.
No, listen, I know that both of you really were into Fire Emblem for obvious reasons, and I support that.
And that's if I just said, this is my number one, because there's so many interesting characters in this game, and every character is so extremely well-written, and the characters all interact with one another. So if you recruit all the characters from the different houses and they're all on your side, you have a buttload of characters that you want to have like interact and become friends. And so I had
some of them can get married.
I had all but two characters in my class. So that meant I had a lot of friendships to build, you see. And so how you do that, how I did it anyways, is this the only way to do it? I can't remember. It's been a while. It's just have everyone kind of stand next to each other during the fights.
That is the only
way. Okay. So it's a lot of grinding and a lot of just like, okay, I'm going to do one more battle with these two next to each other. And maybe I'll get that rank up to like B level. And then I can watch their little conversation play out. And then at the end, you would have like 15 or 20 conversations of between characters to watch. And so that was something I did a lot.
So she recruited everybody. I only recruited like two people from other classes. So I kept my class size fairly small.
That would make it difficult.
So it was, it was a little, I played that. I just, you know, relaxed and enjoyed it because again, I've fallen down the rabbit hole of games like that where you're min-maxing everything or level grinding a lot. And I was just, I didn't want to do that. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I just wasn't in the mood.
That's okay. It's all right. You don't have to be in the mood. My most sleepless nights game was definitely The Outer Worlds. Mm. It was very addicting from that classic RPG loop perspective that if you're into RPGs, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm just going to go check this side quest over here.
Oh, totally.
Go check this thing over here. Well, I have to go turn this thing over here, but if I go get these three things, then I can turn them all in at once. And I found myself up until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning multiple times with this game because it felt so good. The gameplay loop just felt good. And I know that there are people that had some gripes with the way that the pacing of the missions went because, and in fairness, I agree that you would go do some exploring and then a mission would send you back to the area that you had already been. But what they did with the pathing is that if you had already picked up that item, you could just turn it in right away, which I love in RPGs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's worse when they allow you to explore it and then they force you to go back, even if you've already been there, because the game doesn't recognize that have already been there. So they didn't do that, which I appreciated, but
100%. I going back to Horizon, I would completely discover a whole area from head to toe, and then I would talk to someone. Suddenly, there's a quest item that can be picked up in that area. It's like, oh man, but I was already there, and I really appreciated that. The Outer Worlds,
yeah,
thank you.
Classic RPG. Thanks, Obsidian, you did it.
Shout out to my time in Portia, which consumed my soul for a very long time.
Yeah, I feel like
too.
You played that game an inhuman amount.
Yeah, it was a thing.
Like one of those time suck games for sure.
Gathering, crafting, farming, relationship building, festivals are my notes under
here. I love that you wrote festivals.
That's what gets me. The freaking
festivals.
You're
like, it's time. Who's going to be my date for this festival?
Yeah, no one, because they didn't script any different conversations in during the festivals, which is one of the reasons why I stopped playing.
What?
Yeah, it was a thing. Anywho, yeah, my time in Portia.
Could
Pokemon
you throw
Sword.
An egg at people? Here, I give you this gift. Not throw, but like I always liked how in Stardew Valley, you're just holding
this
giant
egg. You just give
people
eggs. And
the egg is like, if it was to scale, would be ginormous. It'd be huge.
It'd
be like an ostrich egg you're giving someone.
But no, my time in Portia was definitely a time sink for me as well. But I think Fire Emblem got me in the end.
Fire Emblem is a good one, for sure.
So let's do a hard pivot from Fire Emblem to evil things.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's time for the best villain of 2019.
Rose.
Do you guys remember who won last year?
I said yourself and Celeste.
Oh, that's a good answer.
That's way too like intellectual.
Oh, I'm about to get even stupider with it.
Oh, okay. Oh. Well, then let's go ahead and start with you, Miss
The best
Stammer.
Villain this year is Gravity and Death Stranding.
Oh, no! Left trigger, both triggers.
Yeah, it just drives you crazy.
Okay, so last I talked to you, you were enjoying your time with it. Where are you at?
I put it down to finish Fallen Order, which I did. I finished After Party, and I'm almost finished with Outer Worlds. After that, I'm picking it back up again.
Okay.
But yeah, the Gravity, and I was just like, good God, all I'm doing is fighting this, and it's got to be one of the toughest bosses I've encountered yet.
Gravity. Wow. Okay. When you mentioned that you had an interesting person for this, I did not anticipate Gravity.
Yeah. I didn't say it was a person. I said a stupid answer.
Fair. That's fair. Okay, Brittany.
Okay. So I have the board from The Outer Worlds. So I guess this is when we have the conversation of how are we treating.
Okay.
How are we treating spoilers on the show?
Don't go. I don't want you to do it because I'm almost done.
Don't spoil the ending.
Okay.
Yeah, no spoiling of the ending of any of the games in 2019. I think that that's fair. I think anything up through the first third of the game is probably fair because none of these games have come out in the last 30 days. So if you haven't made your way through the first 15 to 20 hours of the game at this point, I think that's probably on you. So fair game. If you want no information on any of the games that came out in 2019, I don't know why you're watching this video to begin with or listening to this episode. So hopefully you've played some of the best games of 2019. But yeah, we'll try to keep it as like major spoiler free as possible.
Okay, yes. So spoiler free, because I have specific examples here that I will not read because these could be quests that people do at the beginning of the game or toward the end of the game. It's just, and we'll get into this in best fictional world, but I think the board as a whole, you know, is depicted as like, the bad guy when you're playing the game, right?
Yeah.
And then learning what they do and how they treated these colonists and the decisions they made and the little micro decisions they make that you learn through side quests, I think is really fascinating. And on one hand, it's like, you can't fault them for trying things, but then when you really learn the nitty gritty of what they're doing then you're like, you guys are really assholes. So, I'll just leave it vague at that, but I thought that was a really interesting.
Yeah. I think that they did an interesting thing in Outer Worlds with just corporations and how you view them, and like you could be pro corporation or I feel like they maybe over heavily slanted for you to be away from it. They kept saying in a lot of interviews like, no, it's all, you know, there is no good or bad. I'm like, okay,
there always like, is good or bad.
You have written this from a different, you should do a different job writing this then, if you, because it clearly feels like there's a good and an evil, so maybe we need a bit more gray in there. But
I thought that way about Mass Effect too. I'm really totally, about yeah. most games that give you narrative choice with a morality system. I feel like the writers always try to say that they're going to give you options, but moral compass is a thing that you either have or you don't have.
You're either a sociopath or you're not. Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Mine might be a little too on the nose, but this villain scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh, and
so of course I'm picking Mr. X as my best villain in 2019. Like a goose Mr. X. Did you guys ever see the mod from Untitled Goose Game where it was the giant goose with a hat with a fedora on? It was hilarious. So I had never played the original Resident Evil games. I think the first Resident Evil I started with was Resident Evil 4 or 5 that I dabbled in. Obviously, I've said on the show multiple times that Resident Evil isn't my thing because they're frightening and I don't like to be afraid.
Same.
So, so I decided to play through all of Resident Evil 2 Remake because I was so impressed with what I saw in preview events that I was like, clearly Capcom has gone over the top in making sure that they are doing their due diligence. And, you know, we voted for it for a number of categories for Game of the Year awards. So, or Game Awards, I should say. Anyway, back to Mr. X. So he is, if you guys have never played the game, imagine a guy who seems he's probably like 8 feet tall and probably like
built like a
4 feet wide. Like, yeah, super like beefy, in this creepy trench coat with these glasses, and you're like, he may be dead, but he's not dead.
Is it gray skin?
He's like super pale. Yeah, it's like whiter gray skin. You can't really tell because you never want to get close enough to see.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's in this fedora, this black fedora. And
m'lady.
You always know that he's close because you hear the stomp, 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 stomp. Right, the footsteps are super loud, and then it just makes your heart palpitate because you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to get me. And the thing that's scary about him is that you can't technically kill him. You can only stun him and then run away.
Knock his little hat off.
And then I did knock the hat off. I forgot the achievement. And then you just essentially have to keep running from him for the rest of the game.
You know what's really creepy is someone did a mod where they zoomed the camera out. So they had a lay of the land of the entire Raccoon City Police Department, and they hid. And Mr. X literally does go around the entire map looking for you. It shows him just like skittering around. And
wait, and they hid in a spot he couldn't get to?
They may have been in a safe room. I don't know where they went. They went somewhere where he didn't know where they were at first. Okay. But yeah, he moves around and it's kind of like a superhuman speed, like faster than the stomp, stomp, stomp. And he's just kind of skittering around the whole level.
I'm sure they speed the AI up when you're
If you're a certain distance away.
Yeah, to make him find you quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
That's terrifying.
Mr. X on rails.
Yep.
Woo!
No, thank you.
And this time, I want to give it a shout out to the Fire Emblem characters.
Yes, I was going
to
say that too. Yeah, keeping it, obviously, we're not going to say, because like it depends kind of on which route you take.
And this was something
I thought was really clever.
Realized until after you and I had our spoiler cast, when you learn the intentions of the other house leaders, it's like, oh. And I think that's what makes a great villain, right, is when...
Yeah, everyone has their own perspectives. Yeah.
You're kind of crazy.
They did a really nice job with Fire Emblem, for sure.
All right, next category is best fictional world. There are a lot of worlds that we revisit with franchises because you get, you know, sequels and multiple installments. But sometimes you get a brand new IP that has a cool world, or you get a reimagining of a world that you have been to before but is new and different and exciting. So this category is dedicated to those who build worlds, artists, animators, level designers. We see you, Stimer. Who is your vote?
Well, I have two because I liked, I feel like you're going to pick one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. You can discuss that one. So the other one I was thinking about that I really loved is After Party. I loved the way that they imagined hell. Where, you know, it's a little bit more corporate than you might expect, and you get flogged from 9 to 5, but then otherwise you're hanging out, drinking, and just kind of hang out with demons and whatever. And I thought it was a cute way of imagining supposedly one of the worst places in the universe if it exists. So, yeah, I thought it was really cute, and I loved the way it was basically just a giant party.
Nice. I need to spend more time with that game. It was my treadmill game for a while, and then I kind of fizzled.
But. That's fair. Yeah, I was telling her on the show, like the thing that bothered me the most, and it, I don't know if it's probably different on PC. I'm assuming it runs better. But on the Xbox that I'm playing on, it is chugging.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Very badly.
I had that issue, too. Yeah, the chugging.
Yeah, and I was just like, come on.
That's music syncing, as always. I always have
frame
sound
rate. Yeah, but aside from that, the actual world building of After Party, I think, is very well done. And it's fun to listen in on conversations and see what, you know, what sort of things you get up to in hell if you're dead. Drinking. Yeah, also a lot of drinking.
So my choice is The Outer Worlds. So obviously, again, we won't go into spoilers, but the skip drive has been a thing that's been discovered or invented. It's been a while since I've played the game. And now we can colonize different areas, and it's exciting. Go Earth, yay.
It's basically like the skip drive is basically the relays for Mass Effect.
So what's interesting about this is I was reading some articles about the world building in The Outer Worlds, and there was a Q&A with developers Tim Kane and Leonard Boyarsky. And so I'm going to read some history real quick. It's only a paragraph, so you won't get too bored, I promise.
Okay.
So this is like actual history. So President McKinley was assassinated in 1901, and this forced Vice President Teddy Roosevelt, you may have heard of him, to be sworn in. And then these are my notes, he did stuff that basically prevented big businesses from growing so big that they owned everything.
Yes.
Right. So in The Outer Worlds alternate universe, McKinley was never killed and corporations didn't have antitrust laws. And that was something that was hinted at by the two of them during a YouTube interview with, God, was it Game Informer? It was someone, an editorial place did an interview with them. And I just thought that was a really interesting concept to take and kind of run with it and see what happens when you do. I mean, space colonization is something that I think a lot of people have thought about in the far future. And what does that look like? And they really took that concept and kind of ran with it. And like, what if, you know, not only is that concept in itself interesting, but what if like this guy was never assassinated and these antitrust laws were never incorporated? What kind of world does that leave us in? And I think they did a really great job at exploring that. It's very believable, sadly.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I loved The Outer Worlds world building as well. That was my first pick, but I was like, well, if Brittany's going to talk about it, I'll talk about something else.
No, I'm with you. I also, obviously, we all love The Outer Worlds. We've talked about it on the show several times. And this was a really hard category for me because there's a game that I really appreciate the world building for that I didn't really like the game of, which I'm sure you guys could guess.
That's fine.
And the other one that I like, you build the world as you go and it becomes really cool. So let me just talk about both briefly. So first, Death Stranding had this really phenomenal design of their world and their universe. And I have to give them props because of the incredible specificity that they put towards making this world and how it felt like it was this unique design place, with the exception of that terrible Monster Energy drink placement, which we talked about on the show, which really broke the immersion of this beautiful world.
There
that
were
created.
A lot of weird things that broke the immersion.
But I think when you are walking around in the world of Death Stranding,
battling gravity,
yes, battling the number one villain, gravity, is that there was something inherently unique about it. And I think that, you know, Kojima Productions really like nailed that sense of world building from that aspect, both not only in level design, but also just like in overall aesthetics, art, animation, music, etc. And I think that they deserve a tip of the hat. The game that I loved spending time in that I thought was really beautiful was Concrete Genie.
Oh, yeah, that was.
So I know it's a little bit untraditional.
Although mine was
because,
a little uglier because I was.
No, but that's the thing that I love about it is that everyone's world was unique to them because you got to build the art in the world. But the way that they designed the art elements and how you could pick and choose to your personal taste and say, I'm going to do like all like, you know, Aurora Borealis effects, or maybe I'm just going to do stars. You can pick which kind of plants you like. And then when you walked around through the areas that you'd already painted, it was just had this like whimsical magic to it that I hadn't felt in a game in a really long time. And the colors were so vibrant and it was really pretty. And so I just really loved that game. And again, if you guys haven't spent the time to play Concrete Genie and you have a PlayStation 4, highly, highly recommend.
Yeah, that was a fun game. It's just like digital painting kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, that's what made it so, I think, beautiful and unique, but also really cool, is that those individual elements were very much handcrafted by an artist on that team, but you got to mix and match those elements to suit your own aesthetic, and that's what I think made it so fantastic.
You say digital painting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Microsoft Paint. Am I going to be like the best there ever was?
I mean, if you don't have as much freedom, but yeah, you could make something interesting.
All I need is that Control Z, and I'm good. The undo button.
You can undo.
You can undo.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next up, two of our favorite categories here at What's Good Games. The best waifu and the best husbando of 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who did we like? Who did we like? And who did we like?
Who did we like? And who did we like? This would be a top pick. But she smokes. And for me, that is a deal breaker. Oh. But otherwise, Nico in Devil May Cry, I thought was adorable.
Oh,
she built you some cool shit.
Yeah,
she's very reliable. Would
you call her a weaponsmith? Quartermaster?
All around badass.
Badass bitch. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, she was cool.
She was cool. I just don't dig the smoking. So she couldn't be an actual waifu for me, but I wanted to give her a little shout out.
Little shout out. I'm going to say Parvati.
Oh, Parvati.
I also chose Parvati from The Outer Worlds.
No, I really relate to her because she really lived a sheltered life. And like growing up, like I grew up in a small town, whatever, you know the story. But I never had like these huge dreams, goals, and ambitions that really pushed me out of my shell until I was much older, so like 19 or 20. Anyway, I don't know how old you were. Anyway.
I was only 5 years old.
Yeah, I was like,
there you go.
Andrew,
like, you knew.
Andrew was an early bloomer.
Yeah. And so it was hard for me to like be like, I'm going to go to Boston by myself and I'm going to, you know, for PAX East and I'm going to do a road trip from Florida to Boston because that's all I can afford. It was a weird thing. Anywho, I did a lot of things that made me like kind of uncomfortable, but I knew I had to do if I wanted to succeed at what I do today. So seeing her being so sheltered and then kind of knowing that she has to push herself to achieve what she wants to achieve, which is seeing things and doing things and learning, was really inspiring and really relatable. Also, I think it's really cool that she's asexual and that was touched upon, and the writer who wrote her is asexual herself. So she saw, you know, it was cool to see that perspective in a game, which I feel like we don't get to see that often.
Totally.
And that in itself is very respectful. So
yeah, she was great. I loved her.
And her little romance.
I also really liked Nyoka. I mean, I liked pretty much all the characters.
Oh, gosh, she's so great. Nyoka is great. So good. I think I have a moment with her for, like, the funniest moment coming up.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I also want to shout out to Edelgard from Fire Emblem.
Oh, see, you have a different experience with her than I do.
I know.
Fuck
but she's a badass, and I love her.
My honorary shout out goes to Anna from Metro.
That's a good one. She was definitely a good waifu.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that she was more present in Metro Exodus because I think that her character is so underdeveloped, and like RTM as a character is, he's like capital F fine. But I think that she is really Raving more interesting, review. But because she spent so much of the trip waylaid for a reason that I'm not going to say for spoiler reasons, or so much of the game, I should say, that I feel like she just didn't get enough time in the spotlight.
Yeah. She was great, though. I'm like, yeah, you go on with your badass self.
Yeah, she's super badass.
Yeah.
Also, runner-up for Kate in Gears 5.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's super cool, even though she, I don't think, would be anybody's waifu.
Yeah, that's kind of like where I'm like, she's super cool. I just don't see her as like a waifu. No. I don't know why. Yeah.
So let's move on to husbandos. Who's your husbando, yes. Steimer?
Yeah. Sylvain from Fire Emblem. Although, here's the thing. I really did love him, and he is definitely a husbando, but I do think that Deacon St. John is a
Deacon,
better pick.
Both of those are on my list.
Deacon is, my husbando.
Really? I just think, like, Sylvain, his whole story, like, he's a playboy, and he's whatever, and he eventually reforms, but I just know in real life it's not realistic. So, yeah. Somebody like Deacon, who is just all for you at the beginning, is probably the better way to go.
Yeah.
I also have a Fire Emblem husbando, Claude Von Regan.
He's a cutie.
Now, granted, I was a Golden Deer house, so
that makes sense.
So I had all my experiences with him firsthand. Oh, we need a That's What She Said pillow on set.
That's
what we're missing.
Yeah,
I don't know how
in my office.
Okay.
We'll get it.
Anywho, yeah, like without spoiling anything, you know, his goals and ambitions are very wholesome, and I know depending on like who you play as, you get a different version of that. But playing Golden Deer out and seeing like what he's aiming for, I'm like, finally, someone who like has good intentions and actually wants to do a good thing. But if you don't play as him, people want to kill him. Even though
play with him.
Too.
You don't play as him.
Well, sorry, yeah, play with him.
Yeah.
So when Simon and I did our spoiler cast, it was interesting. She's like, oh yeah, I killed your boy a long time ago. And I'm like, why would you do that? He had such good hopes for the world, but you didn't get that story.
Sure didn't.
See? Terrible. But he says bando.
Oh, you Fire Emblem kids. Yep. So we were talking briefly about Deacon St. John, who is the protagonist of Days Gone, the
yet another forgotten game.
The PlayStation 4 exclusive that came out back in May that featured not zombies, but freakers.
Freakers!
And it was set in the Pacific Northwest. Yes,
not zombies. Get
and
it right.
This game, I don't want to say we ragged on it, because I think you enjoyed it, Brittany. I enjoyed my time
with it. I enjoyed
it
for a bit, but it was
it was too long, and there were some, especially at launch, there were some really kind of what I would consider like unforgivable problems with the game. Mm-hmm. Not even from a technical perspective, but more from a design perspective. But I think they patched in some things over the months, and if you like open world games that feature zombie-like enemies, then you should definitely check out Days Gone, and hopefully you picked it up on the PlayStation sale. But Deacon, as a character, I thought works for a fantastic husbando, because not only does he as a character stay committed and to his wife, Sarah, throughout the entire game. You know, they had that really impactful, emotional cinematic trailer that they launched before the game released that I thought was really well done. But he keeps this motivation, and they do these flashback moments throughout the game that are really, like, they make you feel something in a way that I wasn't expecting to in a game that focuses on, you know, another infection, and there's this undead, but they're not really undead because they're alive still, but they're just infected.
Freakers, Andrea.
Yeah, they're freakers.
They're zombies.
But I liked him as a character. I thought, as like a husbando, I thought he really just fits so well, because he holds this memory of his wife in such a way that I think is really admirable. And very rarely do we get to see male characters in particular get emotional or feel emotion. We see that from time to time with characters with their wives or other family members, mothers, daughters, etc. But I like how it was a recurring theme throughout the whole game for Deacon.
Yeah.
Also, he's hot. He is hot.
Yeah, you know, the scruff with the backwards hat and the motorcycle.
I don't hate it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hate it either.
No, I don't either. You know, if I hadn't finished, if Horizon wasn't on my top list, that would have been, I think, the game I would have went to try to, like, wrap up. But alas, when I played it, it's just too buggy. Too many issues. My sound was cutting out.
I asked somebody who'd beat the game. I was like, where am I in it? And they were like, well, you still have like a whole other map you need to unlock. And I was just like, it's too much. I can't.
You're like, sorry. Thanks, but no
edit,
thanks.
Edit.
So let's go on to some more impactful relationships with one of my favorite categories of the What's Good Game Awards, Best Friendship of 2019.
Well, Steimer. Speaking of those days gone, boys, I thought that Deacon and Boozer had a really cute mm-hmm. and special friendship. And it was really fun to watch those two characters, one, interact with each other, and two, when as the story progresses and you can kind of see them both grow and struggle. I thought that was really, really well played. Well acted by those boys.
Nice.
I would say BD one and Cal.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh my God. BD's the best boy.
They're so cute because they're two loners, right? And then they're like, oh, now we're going to be
friends.
They're
like, you're okay. I guess you can okay. I guess you can hang around.
And there's that moment. I think it's after Cal fixes BD one's leg. I won't spoil anything, but it's not a spoiler. Don't worry. I'm not spoiling anything. Calm down. BD one, like,
she's not. It's true.
It's fine. BD one.
She, of course, is talking about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah.
Yes.
BD one looks up at Cal and he's like kind of clinging onto his leg. And then Cal's like, okay, you can come up. And then BD one like scurries up to his shoulder and sits on it. That
like
look.
Like a cat. Like a Pokemon. Oh,
that look BD one gives Cal is the look Reb gives me like when he wants to eat or something. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, ooh.
You're my best friend, but only because I need sustenance.
I know.
Please be friends.
And, you know, BD one just needs a ride. And it was just so cute. And watching those two kind of grow their relationship and seeing what it forms into when you discover the purposes of XYZ, it's real cute.
Yeah, BD one was great. I loved him.
Yes.
Mine is maybe a little more wholesome and not as, well, it's similar. So mine is Luigi and the Polter Pup from Luigi's Mansion 3.
That's wholesome.
So
you basically both chose dogs.
Yeah.
Because like the droids are basically dogs. Like they're adorable little things that will follow you around.
I just really love how I don't want to call Luigi dumb because he's not dumb, right?
He's a little doofy.
He's doofy for sure.
Yeah, that's a good word.
I mean, he's aloof, but so is Mario. They're both aloof. But what I
like Luigi in more of a goofy way than Mario.
I would argue that Luigi's more badass than Mario. Mario just jumps on things. Luigi actually fights dead spirits with a vacuum cleaner.
He's terrified while doing it.
But he does it, you know?
He does
he's not
it.
Doing it in like a gung ho kind of way.
Yeah, he's not the hero that Mario.
I would rather have Mario's job though than Luigi's job is what I'm saying.
Would
like,
you?
I would because I'd rather jump on platforms
says
and jump
the
on
the girl who lives for things that scare her.
I guess that's true.
It'd be less stressful to have to go around and suck up ghosts
that's
and
fair.
Shit.
No, deal with we're talking about versions. The Polter Pup though and how great
you're
he
right.
is.
We got off on a tangent. He's really cute.
Wow.
He's really nice.
And he helps Luigi out, and they're friends.
Because he's a good boy.
He's a very good boy. No,
he's a very
cute.
Good boy. So they were one of my favorite relationships. Obviously, there's a lot of friendships that happen in the world of video games, but these are just a couple of our favorites.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There were a lot in Fire Emblem as well. As Brittany kind of mentioned before, you can level up people's relationships and see them grow and develop, and it's really cute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this one has been a challenge, this next award. Best musical moment. I think some years there's standouts.
Like a standout thing, and then
other years it's kind of like, I wonder what this moment means to me.
For me, it was a struggle, but I kind of eventually went with Life is Strange. But I just feel like it's mostly the soundtrack in general. I feel like Life is Strange is one of those games that really matches music to the mood very well. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, some sections where you're walking along like a highway and like whatever the song is playing, it's just perfect for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, I'm not going to pick a specific moment in the game, but I think that they do a brilliant job with their soundtracks.
It's very true. Kind of reminds me of Death Stranding. It's not my pick, but you know, when you'll be like walking around, all of a sudden the soundtrack will kick in.
Mm-hmm.
I think last year, a lot of it was Red Dead Redemption 2 for best musical moment. For me anyway.
Yeah, because it had a similar moment that RDR did where it's just like, and here's this really cool soundtrack
emotional
moment
soundtrack.
And you're like, ah,
my
emotions.
Yeah, I don't want to like dip into Red Dead Redemption 2 because like that was our picks for last year. So I'll put a pin in that. Okay. But the music in that game is great if you haven't played.
So my pick would be Resident Evil 2. The ability to turn the soundtrack from the modern one to the old school 1998 soundtrack when you walk into RPD for the first time. And granted, like in the remake, you know, it's just kind of quiet ambient sounds. But then you can turn on that old soundtrack and that classic music starts playing and it's like, oh my God, so many emotions. That was a really cool thing that was incorporated that I don't think we see a lot of games do. Obviously, there's not as many remakes out there, but yeah, it was an emotional thing. I was living in my emotions. What else do I got? I have a couple others if you want to move on.
Yeah, no, go for it.
I won't spoil it, but there's a moment in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order that we talked about before we started recording.
Oh, yes. I know which moment you're referring to.
That was amazing. And then Cadence of Hyrule also, when you first start playing and that like remixed music starts, the overworld music starts playing.
Oh. The music in Cadence of Hyrule cannot be overstated for how good it is. And the way that they took classic Legend of Zelda tones and worked them into something unique for the style of that game. I was bummed that they didn't get more recognition throughout the year for the work that that musical team did, but it was really good. I'm with you. This one was hard for me because I was thinking about all of the different scores and games with music that impacted me. And, you know, part of me is like, oh, well, there were some really good musical moments in Metro Exodus that really helped with environment building. But then there was some really fantastic moments in Destiny 2 Forsaken, which I really love because I've always loved Destiny's music and has thought it's been super impactful the entire way through. But I kind of feel like I just keep going back to the musical moments that I had in Borderlands 3. Hmm. And I know that we haven't talked a lot about that game this year, and it's probably because we haven't spent as much time with it as we would have liked because of when it came out. But I just love the world building in that game. It was a close runner up for me in Best Fictional World because I really love what they did and how they expanded the idea of it not just being on Pandora anymore in the universe of Borderlands. But I think what the team of Gearbox has done really well is kind of tie in this really unique art direction with not only the animation and world building, but also, of course, like the sounds of the world as well. So I don't know if that's an official answer for best musical moment.
It is the answer you submitted, so it counts.
Yes. These are open answer surveys. No, I think this year was a little harder, but that's not to say that there weren't good moments. It's just there weren't as many like pinpoint moments, I think.
Right. Okay, moving on. This is another one that was challenging.
Oh, jeez.
And we're going to probably...
No, this was not challenging.
Okay.
If it's the one I'm thinking of.
Then introduce the category.
Yeah, okay. So, best horsey is hands down Ponyta from Pokemon Shield because she's a freaking My Little Pony and she's incredible.
That's fair.
I can't believe neither of you are on board with the Ponyta.
See, because I didn't have Ponyta in my... Because I had Sword.
You had Sword? Okay. She's only in Shield.
I didn't get the Galarian.
Or he or she, because Ponyta is just a species.
Traditionally, best horsey has been a mount category. Does not have to be a mount in order to be nominated.
You want.
Ponyta is a very good nominee for best horsey of the year.
Yes.
Yeah, you nailed that.
The Galaga region, Ponyta, to be specific.
I have Deacon's motorcycle here with a question mark after it, but then it's like...
It's not a sentient thing, though.
Is it a mount?
I don't know. A mount.
It's definitely a mount, but it's not alive.
No, and also that thing bugged out on me so many times, like where I lost all sound in my game that I just can't.
That's fair, yeah.
I'd be on that thing and everything would go to shit and the world would have no sound.
Poor motorcycle.
I don't know. It was cursed. So yeah, that's all I have for this. I have nothing else.
I know. I feel like this year I didn't really play any games that required me to use a mount in the way that we had the previous few years.
Yeah, it's been a mountless year.
I mean, I think about, because last year it's like we had AC Odyssey and Red Dead.
Yeah.
It was like the
mount. We had a lot of horsies last year.
There was a lot of mount selection last year. And this year, it's like, well, what games
this year
even
we're using
had
best
mounts?
Horsey literally,
yeah,
and it's Ponyta.
I mean, literally, I think that's the answer we're gonna have to tell.
But is Ponyta the winner because there's no contestants?
Ponyta is the winner because My Little Pony was the greatest.
So I'm going through my personal game of the years, and none of them had mounts, and so like that would have to be my pick,
right?
I mean, unless you want to pick the wyverns in Fire Emblem, but
no, I do not.
See, there you go then. See, Steimer says it must be true.
I just feel like there were not enough mounts this year. What the heck?
Doesn't matter because we have Ponyta. That's all we need.
Okay. That's very true. I guess uncontested Ponyta is the best mount of 2019.
Best horsey.
Yes. I think what I would like to do at this moment is take a very short break before we get to the rest of the categories, because I think from here on out, these are going to become a little bit more in-depth. We've got some fun ones coming up. So let's just take a short break. When we come back, we've got categories like Best Romance, Best NPC, and of course, our personal game of the year is still to come.
I want to get it in the evening, and I want to get it at supper time when pizza's on the bagel.
Or whatever. Pizza anytime.
It's on a bagel because it's a bagel bite. You know, my least favorite thing is the fact that pizza rolls always explode, and so you can never actually have, like, a perfect pizza roll.
Yeah, you're right. And then you bite into it and it burns the shit out of your mouth.
It's such a great concept, and it's always poorly executed.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the second half of the What's Good Game Awards 2019, a very special episode to round out a fantastic year of games. We are going to pick up with the best costume of 2019. This is usually a pretty difficult one, but one stood out in my mind.
What was yours?
I was going to have you go first.
No, girl, you go first.
Yeah, you go.
Oh.
I've been going first this whole time.
Yeah, it's true.
This is going to seem a little obvious knowing that I'm a giant Destiny fan, but the Destiny 2 Solstice armor this year with the glowy ornaments.
I didn't see it.
Was my favorite. And I bitched a lot about how difficult it was to get, but I got it. And I'm glad I did because I love it. So Hunter is my main. I actually don't really play the other classes. I dabble in Titan. I don't even mess with the Warlock because the jumps are bad. That's right. I said it. Go ahead. Let's fight about it. Oh. Hunters got the best jumps. We got the hops.
Triple jumps.
And so the glowy ornament pieces, I should say, change the color of like the kind of like neon glow that your armor has depending on which subclass you have. I mean, you can mix and match them, but they glow brighter if that matches your subclass. So each main class has subclasses that are either purple, orange, or blue, and purple was my fave
because it's pretty.
So yeah, for obvious reasons.
We're fresh out of Christmas, so when you're saying ornament armor, I just have like these guardians.
Maybe we should look it up
with all these like dangly like bulbs and shit.
Google it.
Yes, no, I will pull up a photo. So,
you got it. Okay.
Solstice armor. The way that the ornaments work and the way that they reworked gear in Destiny this year is that essentially it's It's like a riff on transmog, but it's not quite transmog.
They're more cosmetic.
Right. So it essentially allows you to take a piece of armor and just change the cosmetic look of it, but keep the stats.
Yeah. Hello, it's a loot game.
It definitely took them a long time in order to get that.
Yeah,
in there
was a lot of stuff where they did it, and I was like, literally, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Stop.
I'm going to go back to my fave RE2, the 98 Claire Leon Polygon outfit.
You don't like, well, I guess technically it's not a costume, but what? Tofu?
I mean, that's great too.
But is it a costume? I guess no.
No, Tofu is Tofu, right? Like,
yeah,
Tofu
okay.
is just Tofu. I'd be saying it's like, just... you're a costume of Christine Steimer.
I might be.
Free DLC, but yeah, you could be Claire Leon from 1998's original RE2 and walk around with your little polygonal glory.
Polygonal.
I like my polygonal.
That was
like an intentional like mispronunciation. I know I mispronounce a lot of things, but polygonal.
I'll let you live
my best life. And then, do you have another one? Because I have a little runner-up.
I do, okay. Yeah. So mine is Edelgard. She has it's sort of like second half of the game costume, like costume change, because they all do. Phenomenal.
So you're talking about like her second...
Her Empress kind of outfit, where she just looks like a dragon lady. It's cool. Like, she's got her hair done in like fun ways. Like her outfit's impeccable. I would totally wear it.
You should.
Please give it to me.
You should. No, her costume is great.
Now I'm looking for, I could have swore I took a screenshot of my own armor and I can't find it.
Oh, no, the ornament armor does not exist. It's all a figment of your imagination. No, it's not a figment. It was a fever dream.
So there's this one, which okay. You can see. This is what it looks like, but that's the solar.
So here.
Show imagine and tell. The purple glowy, but like this is purple instead.
Cool. So not, I was also thinking Christmas ornament. I'm a little disappointed that it's not.
No, imagine like a really cool looking piece of armor for your character. And then they're just like.
I really was expecting there to be like Christmas balls.
I wasn't expecting that. So it's so sad because she goes through all this effort to fight it. And so I was like, cool. I was like, dang, girl.
Well, like, in my head, I'm picturing something that, like, number one, does not look very cool. So I was wondering why you would want it. But two, would be kind of interesting.
Wow. Wow, doesn't look very cool.
Would you want armor with Christmas balls all over you?
I mean, maybe.
It depends on the quality of the balls that are dangling.
That's also true. I think the thing that made it more impactful for me is like the grind to get it. Just like anything in any RPG, right? Any costume.
Sorry, we're talking about balls and grinding.
Also, I want to mention the N7 Day costumes that were in Anthem.
They were so good. I was so sad that it was in Anthem because it made me sad for a lot of reasons.
It's definitely one of those games that I completely forgot about.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It came and it went, and we've never heard about it again. It's popped up and made tiny squeaks every now and again.
It would be fascinating to go back and listen to last year's most anticipated of 2019 episode.
Anthem was mine.
It was mine, too. Yeah.
And I mean, I wasn't expecting it to happen this way, I gotta say. Which is what you really never know with video games. So I think I said mine might be Cyberpunk this coming year. Could be totally garbage. Who knows? We don't know yet.
And I'm looking at the cost of these costumes, and it was like $8 per skin. But in order to buy the shards, you'd have to buy a $10 bundle. And it's like, there's your problem, man.
There were a lot of problems.
There were so many problems. They should have just, I think what would have been awesome is if they appealed to all of the Mass Effect fans out there like us and said, hey, we're going to give you these costumes for free if you just log back in between this date and this date. And I think that would have gotten a lot of people to go back and revisit the game after they had patched it multiple times and added all these quality of life upgrades.
Or even just be
upgrades.
Like, you know what, we're going to eat the cost of these N7 skins. And yeah, on N7 day, everybody
gets them for free. Them for if free. You log in and do like one mission or whatever, right?
Literally, yes. Do one thing.
Boom. Here you get go. All three
You get a present.
Armors.
And then please look at all the changes you've made to the game. Because I haven't logged back in. I have no idea what that game is like now.
To see the re-reveal rumors of 2020 come to fruition.
Ooh.
The relaunch rumors.
I feel like we got to pin that and talk about it.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
next week's show. All right. Let's move on, shall we, to the funniest moment of 2019.
I would say something from The Outer Worlds, and it's literally my note, something from The Outer Worlds. So I won't get into all of the, oh fuck it, I'll do it. Okay, so you have,
is this a spoiler alert?
It's Ada. And the bot that cleans her.
Ada is your ship's AI.
Yeah, she's been talked about publicly. Yeah. We talked about her on the panel that I hosted at PAX a long time ago.
Okay, there we go. Well, I came across this during my playthrough and I thought it was so funny that I found a YouTube video and so I could like transcribe what happens. So what's the robot's name again?
The cleaning bot?
Yes.
Sam,
thank you. And so you can walk in on Ada. Is it pronounced Ada or ADA?
I think Ada.
I call her Ada.
Okay, Ada. And, you know, it's just one of those random things you just stumble upon. And Sam is cleaning her. And her words are, no, don't desist. I think I might like it. Further data collection is required for accurate assessment. Not today, Sam. I am not in the mood for a deep clean. Oh, all right. Sam, my vacuum tubes require evacuating. Well. No, not those. The ones in port. Yes, there. Thank you. And while you're at it. And then later, I am a dirty, autonomous, digital astrogator, Sam. Oh, we'll continue this later. Oh, Captain, perhaps you can afford us some privacy, please. So just like walking
in. I never saw them do that.
Really?
No. Dude.
It was really funny.
So funny. And I think what makes it even funnier is just Ada's.
She keeps asking for him, I didn't get this part. She's always like, can you have Sam like come over here? But I haven't seen them interact.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just funny to see her avatar on the screen. It's just like her little look. And, like, her eyes will get really big when she's like, yes, there. And then you'll walk in and she's like, oh, Captain.
And she's like, could you not? That's a little like, not? There's a sock on the door. Take a hint.
Yeah. Also, it's just funny in the beginning when Hawthorne.
Sock on the door.
Oh, I've never heard the sock on the door thing.
Really?
That's like an old roommate thing.
Yeah.
Like whenever you saw like a roommate's sock on the door, you like knew that they had like a guest.
Yeah. Like, please don't bother me.
That's interesting. But no, that was just a funny game all around. And then I have some other little tidbits in here when you'd walk in on some of the enemies. And someone would say, today's my birthday. And the person next to them would be like, oh, yeah? Fuck your birthday. Just like random things like that. It's like, oh, that's cute.
There's one, I'm going to be vague, but, and this could not happen for you in Outer Worlds, but I actually just sat there and cackled for a bit. And there is a quest line, it's a side quest, where eventually, like, you could take a drug trip. And she could not be with you on this, but she was with me, and Nioka was. Oh, fantastic.
She wasn't with me. Was it good?
She was find it. Really good. I just cackled. It was great.
Yeah, it's just
there's a lot. I mean, honestly, The Outer Worlds is a very humorous game in general. The writers there, you know, they can write a pun. So I found the whole game very enjoyable from a humor perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only other game to me that had multiple humorous moments was Borderlands 3. Mm-hmm. The moment that they introduced Ice-T's character. No, Ice-Cube. No, it was Ice-T. Oh my gosh, why am I? I'm having a blank.
Ice.
Oh my gosh.
I'm pretty sure it's Ice-T.
S-U-V. S-V-U?
S-V-U. So Ice.
Yeah. His character, Baylex. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, pretty much like almost involved. All of his moments I thought were funny, just because I think his voice sounds so hard. Like,
he's got a great voice.
Like, I'm gonna fuck you up. But then it's like this, like,
in the context, yeah, it's like humorous.
This, like this little like stuffed thing or whatever, and then it becomes the bot later. And I just thought it was really fun. Like, there was a lot of fun moments.
It's a funny game.
Yeah. Okay, next category is the best romance of 2019.
Oh, I have Parvati and Junlei.
They were very sweet.
They were really cute because Parvati's so awkward and she's like, what am
They're
I?
Both awkward.
They're both
Dude,
awkward.
Junlei was like, so she like writes some really bad poetry.
Well, she
which
does,
is,
but at least she has the confidence to carry herself and at least try. Where I feel like Parvati was like, oh my God, do I do this? What do I do? Tell me everything I do. And Junlei's like, fuck it, I'm just going with it. I'm going to write you
She's
some
like, here's
thing.
Some poetry.
Yeah. And she did.
She did an iambic pentameter for some kicks.
Ooh.
Don't do that. It's not really.
Brittany's
that
like,
way.
What is that?
What is that?
What is iambic pentameter?
Yeah.
It's what you read Shakespeare in. It's a cadence, basically, of speech.
It has to do with syllables and stuff.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Ask John later.
I'll ask that kid. He's smart. But yeah, though their whole quest line to get them together and hooked up was just really cute. And then when they actually had their little date thing that, you know, you can get to.
You can just like. Snoop-on.
I just like crouched and like walked around the whole time like proud parent like oh my
You're
god
like,
what are
yes,
you guys talking
discuss
about
discuss your parents
I know it was so cute totally. It was just a really really sweet romance.
I don't know that I would want to do that on a first date
probably not no
Hi,
no
tell me all
don't.
About your father and your mother no thank you
yeah no
so I had two I had a serious one and a funny one
okay
so the serious one for me was RTM and Anna from Metro Exodus because their romance is this kind of backbone for the whole narrative that's happening and him trying to get to the city to get to the thing that's going to save her from the sickness that she has and how they have been tied as characters throughout the entire Metro series and kind of where they end up. And I really just love where they went in Metro Exodus. And I think Metro Exodus overall as a game was wildly underrated for how good it is. And if you guys are into first-person shooters and love thriller games and enjoy like a really challenging shooter, then I think you should definitely check out Metro if you haven't as a franchise. I think I said that back when the game came out. So definitely in contention for best romance for me. But also, on the funny side, I was like, what about like Sam Porter Bridges and BB as a romance?
Well, that makes me feel weird.
I mean, it's weird. Okay, it's maybe
it's
not romance.
It's not romance.
It's love.
There's definitely
a romance.
Love.
But it's not
like,
romance.
Yeah, it's a feeling connected to someone, but in not a I want to bang you kind of way.
That's fair.
There we go. That's a good clarification of this category.
Yeah. Okay. You have to have, well, but then in that case, Parvati is asexual. So like she doesn't necessarily want
to. Should it be best love interest instead of romance?
Yeah, let's define romance. Could it just be like swelling of overwhelming emotion?
Actually, it does work. It works well, not for the bit that yeah. part doesn't quite work, but the variety thing is fine because I do think romance is just more about like your feelings for someone and it's separated from the sexy bits.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily.
We don't have the best new category. Best physical moment. Like physical moment between
they're
characters.
Not gonna be like I feel like this year I don't know
not this year there but I think it'll apply next year. You're gonna have Last next of Us year, you're gonna have Cyberpunk you're gonna
will
have,
next oh, year yeah. we'll maybe it could be an addendum for the 2020 addendum.
Yeah
the What's Good Game Awards 2020
What's Good Game like Awards be like sorry like we need the best moment. Yeah because there were oh god that just reminds me of the really awkward one in Mass Effect I think 3 where you have a shower scene you're both in the shower and you're both clothed. Do you not remember
with
that?
What character?
It's like you could, it's somebody, it's like an offshoot character. It's not a main one. Okay. I think it might be your ship steward or something. And she just comes up and you're taking a shower, but like, or she's taking, I don't remember, but you both get in the shower fully clothed and it's really weird.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I think they ran out of time.
Remove the clothes. Okay. No, I'm
just it's really strange.
Okay. But no, I think that should be a good category for next year. We'll use that. But right now, yeah, nothing.
Oh, she's now looking up Mass Effect clips, and all I want to do is play Mass Effect. I think I found my old 360, which I'm very excited about because now I can bring my Mass Effect 2 save forward.
Nice. Okay. I don't know if you saw the YouTube comments. Rewinding it to the last episode you and I did together, a bunch of people hopped in, and they said that you can bring that save data
That's
over.
What I'm saying.
Oh, that is what you're saying. Okay.
But that was my problem is that I thought that I had misplaced it. In that between John and I's combining of households, that my 360 mm-hmm. somehow might have gotten wiped and sold, and his 360
I got
was
you,
kept,
got you, got you.
And I never saved it because at one point we had like 5 or 6 360s in the house because he had all of these Dance Central ones that were branded from when he worked with Xbox in his Harmonix days. Anyway, that's an aside.
So the girl who started out in the shower is in her bra and underwear because I often shower in my bra and underwear.
Explain what the scene is that you guys are watching.
The scene is who's the character? Trainer, yeah. Trainer. So she... Trainer. I don't remember why she even comes to your... It's the scene, right?
Like in which game?
Mass Effect 3.
Yeah. Mass Effect 3.
And she comes to your room to shower? Are you in her room? I don't
know. Okay,
remember.
So Trainer's coming in and Shepard's like, hello, baby.
Wait, so
I
who is Trainer?
You.
Trainer is the ship, I don't know, helper. She's
it's
on.
Long,
she's
like the ship office manager, would you say?
Yeah, I don't remember what her title is. Specialist.
Yeah, Specialist okay. Samantha Trainer is the comm specialist aboard the Alliance.
Yes. Okay.
And so they're like chatting. Shepard's like, hey, baby. And Trainer's like, hey, baby, we're just making small talk. And Shepard's like, how about a shower?
And then so Trainer gets in the shower in her bra and underwear.
I mean, that's listen,
weird.
Andrew,
which
Shepard
is weird.
Fucking fast.
And then Shepard gets in to join her fully clothed.
Oh, yeah. No, here we go. Here, this is it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, she's definitely still, in the shower.
She's in her bra, though. She's still.
Is Shepard's like in her armor?
Yeah. Not her armor, in her like her suit clothes, her. Casual
she's
outfit
like
on the
watching
ship.
Her? It's like,
no, what? she's looking off into space. She's not even watching her.
Okay, so here we got some.
Okay, so we got so the image.
She's giving her quote unquote privacy, even though she's again wearing enough clothing that she would be covered. She's in her bra and panties.
Oh, so now then you have the option to join her and not join her. So Shepard walks up to her.
Oh, wait, now she's naked.
No, she's not.
I saw butt cheeks.
No, she's maybe wearing a bra still.
Wait, I
see the bra in a minute.
Wait, no, I saw under boob. Oh, but there's
the bra. Yep.
She's now still wearing
weird.
A bra.
Oh,
okay. This got sexy really fast.
It's so
okay,
weird,
so
though.
Shepard walks up to Trainer in, like, her armor, and she's like, okay, well, you're, like, halfway naked, and I'm not, but I'm going to walk up to the shower in my armor anyway.
Okay. New segment for the new year for Cyberpunk and whatever games have it.
Okay.
We're going to do a sex scene review.
Okay.
Okay.
And we will break it down and discuss what we think works and what does not.
Great. That sounds great.
Done.
What next category.
What?
Snap. It sounded like someone snapping gum.
No, an ice cube in my drink like cracked.
Oh, yeah. That's what that was.
Okay. It just.
Science. It was just
did
science.
Did it like
it's okay.
spit on you?
Yeah.
Kind of liked it. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Okay.
Before it gets weird.
Also, best drumming okay. you and Sylvain or slash you and anybody you pick in Fire Emblem.
Wait, what are you talking about?
You and for best romance, you and anybody you pick in Fire Emblem.
Yeah. See, I would, that's okay, but the S ring stuff is stupid. because you can't like progress your romance.
Apparently it's stupid, everybody.
No, because like I agree, like the dialogues you the have dialogues are great. Are
good. I do agree that the lock for how long it takes you to do S rank is really obnoxious.
Yeah, it's like I had clawed S rank for so long, but I couldn't.
Same. Yeah. No, yeah, Sylvain was. Yeah, they all are because they won't go until the main plot is resolved. Which is annoying. I think it's just because we are used to like Mass Effects and whatever, where you always get that unlock right before the final mission. And in this one, it unlocks after the final mission. So for us, it felt like way too long because we are used to getting our cookies a lot sooner.
Truth. We want them cookies.
Now I want cookies.
We can make this happen.
Best DLC of 2019. Hard pivot.
Yeah, it is. Oh, unlimited ammo in Resident Evil.
That's a good piece of DLC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know. I saw it because I was like, that was immediately what came to my mind because it's the only DLC I even thought about purchasing this year.
Mm-hmm. So for $5, you get all the campaigns and RE2, bonus weapons, infinite ammo, model concept art, etc. And yeah, it's the best way to play RE2 if you're like Simer and you're like, hey, I'm
if you're like
scared.
Me and you're like, I don't want to deal with this extra stress in my life.
Mm-hmm. You want to experience the story.
I just want...
the puzzle solving, all that kind of fun stuff. It's
but I don't movie. Also. I also don't want a Let's crazy be real, man Simon, to chase
you're never
going to
play this game. It's fine.
I'm not going to. But this is a good. If, you know, I think the problem. This came after the game came out a little bit, not too much longer, but enough where it was staggered off. If they release the next one with that like day one, I might be more inclined to be like, okay, I can just kind of go for it.
Yeah, with RE3 coming out.
Yeah, with RE3. Yeah. I mean, I could also be just full of shit, and that might not be a thing that I do either. But it's a better shot than me having already had put it down and then being like, I gotta go back to it. I already screamed in my apartment. I was worried about my, you know, neighbors calling the cops, so.
Did you scream as like a test scream?
No, I screamed because the game was scary and I was scared.
Mm. Mm. Did you scream as loud as when I scared you and Brittany?
I hope not, because that would be really
I don't
intense.
Think so, but I did, it was a real scream. It wasn't like,
Oh, that was like a Disney princess. Scared.
No, what is going on? Where are you taking me? All right,
well, I could have kept going with that, but I'm not gonna.
No, please don't.
But yeah, that's what I had for my best DLC too. Good job.
This is hard for me because I feel like I almost need to nominate DLCs that I wanted to play but never did.
That's fair. You go on.
I'm bad about it.
No.
Because Celeste had DLC that I didn't get to play. Borderlands 2 had DLC that connected Borderlands 2 to Borderlands 3 that I actually never played. There was just so many. And even like Iceborne for Monster Hunter World, I like dipped my feet into and then just... got busy. This year has been really tough for me with DLCs and going back to games and really exploring additional content. So it's been tough because there wasn't like a giant standout piece of DLC for me, because I wouldn't call, you know, the expansions what in Destiny 2 DLCs, even though I guess technically they are.
Really downloadable content?
Yes, but they're also purchasable in retail format. So
it was our thing.
Yeah. But I think that there's a lot of cool stuff. I also think what Mortal Kombat 11 was doing with DLC this year was really cool with all of the extra characters. I mean, they had freaking Terminator in the game. Like, that was awesome having Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think he was a fantastic piece of DLC. I think all the extra skin packs and costumes that they put into Mortal Kombat 11 were really fantastic this year. And there's some really cool things that are happening in a bunch of different games. It's hard for me to just pinpoint a single thing.
That's okay.
Thanks, Brittany.
It's okay.
I appreciate that. What about best photo mode screenshot mode? Nothing.
Oh, I didn't even...
No.
Because I don't think there was really anything this year that stood out.
I mean, the thing to me that's the most laughable one, not in a... like, it's bad, but in like I always laughed, was Death Stranding's, because... I feel like Norman Reedus' character, Sam Porter Bridges, was always making these goofy faces whenever he was in the private room. So when you play Death Stranding, obviously you play as Norman Reedus' character, Sam Porter Bridges, and he just would like do these things, like he would like put his face up to the mirror and like look at his jaw, or he'd like stick out his tongue, or he'd make these weird wonky faces. And it was I was always like, this, you're supposed to be like super serious and you're being really goofy.
That wall was broken.
Isn't there something, again, the wall was broken many times in Death Stranding.
Yes.
It was weird. They like built it up to tear it down. I don't understand it. But I think the funnier thing was, I never got it to happen in my game because I also didn't really try for it. But I saw clips of like, if you zoom in on his crotch or something and then he like punches the camera.
What? I had never heard of that.
Oh.
I saw a clip. I don't know.
Like he's mad that you're looking at
his
junk?
He like brings the camera up and then punches it. But again, I only saw this as a clip on Twitter or social. So I don't know if it was actually... I don't know how to get it in the game. I think I tried to look at his crotch and then I was like, you know what? This feels weird. And I stopped.
I feel like I'm ogling him in an inappropriate way.
He very much looks exactly like Norman Reedus. And this is not a thing I would do to this man if I met him.
Could you imagine? No, you would not.
He would probably punch me in the face.
No, he seems like a cool, chill dude.
Not if you're staring at his crotch.
Well, in fairness to him,
he would at least call you out.
Would you be cool and chill if someone was staring at your crotch?
I probably wouldn't care if they were staring my crush.
You would? Well,
there's nothing down there. I think it's a little different for dudes.
Well, it's definitely different for
you're
dudes.
You're not wrong. Okay, and also, touche.
And there's something there. But
it depends like how like up in the grill are they getting, right? Like if you were like zooming the camera to get up in there, that means like you're...
That's true. That is like an upskirt sort of a situation.
Yeah, I guess we could say like, what if a guy was like zooming his camera in on your chest?
Yes, I would kick him.
Right? You'd be like, what the fuck, dude?
Be like,
there's
no,
like you
bueno.
Said, there's boobies all over the internet.
There
Why
are
do they
boobies
have to be fucking
all over
perverted.
The internet. Go enjoy
Google
them.
That stuff. Yeah, man.
There are also crotches all over the internet.
Want to show off their titties and crotches and ass? They want you to see
you
it.
You go see the people who are consenting for that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Fucking creeps.
Don't leave everybody else alone.
Wow, that's some good life advice. Right
yeah,
there.
It really is.
Anyway, next category. Best NPC. So NPC, of course, non-playable character. This can be a quest giver. It can be a side person. It can be a companion. It can be whoever. There's a lot to choose from this year for best NPC. This was actually really hard for me. But Steimer, who was your favorite NPC of 2019?
I mean, I don't know if they were my favorite, but they definitely came to mind. And that is Satan. In After Party.
Nice.
I forgot about After Party. I'm like, yeah. Whoa.
You're like, whoa, girl. No, number one, he is voiced by Dave Fennoy, who I love. Mm-hmm. And his voice is just so rich and beautiful and velvety. So just I could listen to him all day. But also, I just really liked the arc of Satan. And like what he's dealing with in his own
this
life.
This is our not surprise face.
Satan, the guy that you never thought that you'd feel bad for, but suddenly you do.
Yeah, it was interesting. I liked it a lot. But I mean, I loved so many characters. I loved a lot of the NPCs in Outer Worlds. I thought they were fantastically written. Fire Emblem, obviously. Mm. So there was a lot this year.
I haven't picked one, but I have four nominees. Do you have one picked?
Four nominees? I do have a single person that I've picked. I
don't like the second one.
Though it was tough for me because I liked a lot. But the number one person who stood out in my mind was Grease from Jedi Fallen Order.
I literally just said I don't like that one. And that was the well.
Oh, no, really?
I didn't like Grease. I thought he was...
I love Grease.
Okay, it's because he's creepy looking.
Fine. He does look like a creepy uncle.
Well, but okay, he's an alien.
I am aware of what he is. That doesn't mean I need to like him.
So Grease Drydus is the captain of the ship in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And what I love so much about him as a character is that he's kind of this, like, I don't want to call him an anti-hero because that props him up to be a bigger character than he is, but he's kind of like this lovable curmudgeon, right? Mm-hmm. So he has flaws, sure. But he also has a heart of gold underneath all of this, like, kind of gruff exterior. He's a gambler, so he's got flaws like all of us, but he also is trying to help Cal on his journey and what he's trying to accomplish. And the banter that he has, not only with Cal, but with Sarah and with some of the other characters that he comes into contact with, I just love what they did with him as a character, not just from a character development perspective with his script, but also the voice actor who is played by Daniel Roebuck. He did a fantastic job. And I just loved how natural he felt, because there are so many times when these characters feel stiff, and that's why we always keep coming back to these same voice actors year over year, because those are the ones that really nail the authenticity of making it feel like it's not an animated character, that it's like a somebody that you could actually have a conversation with. And I thought that Daniel did a phenomenal job with Grease, and it's particularly difficult when you're voicing an alien species, trying to get that mocap and that facial animation down, making it feel like it's like a human interaction. And I
did they actually do mocap for that game?
Yes, they did. So I thought it was great.
Grease is great. Yeah, I always thought it was kind of funny.
I think that's just because the game in general for me was sort of like capital F fine. Like, but I do agree that
you picked that. I'm glad you picked that phrase up.
Capital F fine.
I've used it before.
That's my phrase.
Trademark.
I give it to you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, Merry Christmas. I will
take it and love it like my own.
Just like I use Chuckle Fox, which is from John Drake.
Chuckle Fox is great.
That's a good one. So I have BD1. I have Grease.
BD1 I would agree with.
I have Cassidy from Life is Strange 2. And Charizard. Cool.
Those are all good ones. I feel like Cassidy didn't get enough time in the sun.
Yeah, I think what I really liked about her was she was just kind of this grounding force that I... And someone for... Oh my God.
Daniel?
Older brother? Daniel?
Sean. Sean was the older brother.
Thank you. To really interact with, because you never really get to see him interact with someone of the opposite sex, let alone poor someone squirrel. He's attracted to. I know. Somebody's attracted to you and someone who he has like kind of flirtatious banter with.
Well, it depends on your choices. That's true. Some choices you can interact with Finn.
You absolutely can. So in my playthrough, it was really cute to see him, because in the beginning of the game, you know, there's those hints of this girl he's really excited to see at the party. And then you're like, oh, poor guy. You thought you might have gotten laid that night. And then gets
We've all been there.
Ain't that the fucking truth? And then you get to see Cassidy and him interact. And she was just a really, I think, down to earth, good force for him to, you know, kind of get some of those teenage angsty things out on. Literally, if you catch my drift. But no, she was great. I wish we would have seen more of her.
Really, so we've already talked about Pavarti, mm-hmm. So we can pin her.
And BD1, and we've talked about Grease, so I feel like we've kind of covered all these people and things.
Yes, yeah. That is true.
That is true.
There were a lot of... I actually preferred a lot of NPCs to your main character in a lot of games. Like even in I think BD1 was the greatest part of that entire game. Cat was fine. Everything else is fine. But no, like BD was the best. He was so cute. He was such a good boy.
He had the doggy eyes.
Yeah.
He was very cute. There was a lot of really interesting NPCs this year across a variety of games. Like, I mean, there was a lot just in Death Stranding alone that I thought were really good.
I think one character we haven't talked about from Fire Emblem that I do want to call out. She was in the Black Eagles class. Is Bernadetta.
And oh, she's great. Yeah.
When I talk about her is because she was one of those characters that you start out and you are just irritated by.
Uh-huh.
And you were like, oh my God, get it together. What is wrong with you? And then you really, like, you see her story unfold and you completely understand everything she has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
In such a really beautiful way. And I was like, damn. Like, the writers there absolutely nailed that character and they really make you feel for her. And she's, you know, she's like mostly, she's, there's no, not a lot of animation. Like the way that the game is done is a lot of, you know, the conversations are just like a few still screens alternating back and forth, sort of like Ada in Outer Worlds. And so for them to be able to convey a lot of that through not much, mostly voice and
a few like
little cutouts,
facial animations,
yeah,
right?
I think was really cool.
Oh man, no, that got deep.
Yeah, hers really
story.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good one, Simer.
Oh, agreed. All right, moving on to the best LFG game. So that means looking for a group. So this is a category that we dedicate towards that game that you just need a partner or multiple partners to play with you. So you need
you
somebody
play all
to help
of your
you
games
out.
Co-op. What are you looking like that for?
She has a built-in co-op partner, though.
I know.
So I don't even know if Brittany, have you ever used an LFG service of any kind, including the Was Good Games Discord?
No, but she did help me beat that boss in Gears.
No.
I mean, that's true.
That's, I, again, like, I'm floored that happened.
Girl, I love you, and I love Andrea. It's just, it's a thing for me.
That's what I'm just saying. Know. The time, like the fact that it worked.
Multiplayer games are not your thing.
It's true. They are co-op games, multiplayer games.
Right, but what it's I refer it's to like as bourbon a multiplayer and game, I mean a game that is inherently focused around player versus player action.
Oh no, PvP. I see.
Which
far,
is not
far,
a co-op game, and not all.
Sure.
Not all LFG games need to be PvP, of course, but
I like PFP.
PFP, that was not a thing.
Person for person.
But a lot of them are. So for me, I'll start, because I had one that instantly came to mind, was a game I spent a lot of time with that we haven't talked at all about on this show, The Division 2.
I had that too.
Yeah. So we had a fantastic clan of the Agents of WGG, was our clan name, and The Division 2 is, I should say, our clan name. And they have put out multiple pieces of DLC, and from what I've heard, there's still more incoming. And I love that this game really ignited my desire and passion to play with people in a way that hadn't before. Because I think I caught into a little bit of a rhythm playing with the What's Good Guardians and Destiny, because that's my other big LFG game, where I'm never really have to go out and seek people. There's always somebody on. But The Division 2 was a whole different set of people because of a different style of game. And I love that I brought new people into the fold that I hadn't played with in Destiny and that I got to play with in The Division.
Wait. I remember, I'm sorry, I'm just remembering a story about someone in this game. Do you remember the guy was mad that you promoted me?
Yes.
Wait, what?
I don't remember his exact name. We wouldn't call their name out.
But it's tickling me, and so I'm laughing.
Yeah. So okay. So there was a moment when I had been playing in The Division 2 for a couple of weeks, and Steimer was busy with work or something, and she came on a couple of weeks later. But because of that, of course, her level was low, and I promoted her to, I think, lieutenant
a higher rank.
It's
in
like
the
second highest rank next to the clan lead, which was me and one other person. And somebody messaged me and got very upset that so-and-so's screen name got promoted because they had been looking to get promoted beyond the recruit level or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I messaged in the clan chat, that's Steimer. Of course, I'm going to promote her. And I don't think that they understood.
Yeah.
But everybody in the clan are WGG people, which is why I was like, yo, dog, like, don't make it awkward.
It was Steimer, really funny. Of course,
I'm going to promote her over everybody else. I don't care what her clan is.
He also wrote it in the clan. Like, everybody saw it. Everybody saw his message in the clan chat, because clan chat's open. And he wrote it in clan chat being like, who is this person and why would they get promoted over me? I've been here longer.
Oh,
and
I was like, look at you.
Me.
Stomping on their hopes. Steimer's screen name does not have her name in it.
No, yeah.
Right? And so they were like, who is this random person getting promoted? But then Steimer was like getting sassy. It was a funny moment.
Really
funny. And I felt
that
I think he felt bad afterwards.
Yeah, but I had a good chuckle.
So did he know who you were?
I don't know.
Okay.
Remains to be seen.
See, some people find us because what's good games can be a very generic term.
It's true.
And then we're like, all right.
But when it comes to being accepted into the clan, thankfully in all of the What's Good Games clans across multiple games and in the Discord as well, we have fantastic admins and moderators who are very good at making sure that the people that are there that are part of our community, that are fans of the show, and most importantly, that are respectful to all of the members in all of the groups.
Yep.
And if they're not, we say, yo, this just isn't the place for you.
Yep.
Goodbye.
Kick you to the abyss.
Goodbye. Pink.
Anyways, I'm sorry to cut you off. You were just talking about the game, and it just made me laugh.
No, but like I love The Division 2, and I am sad that I haven't had a real reason to go back. And I'm hoping that, you know, they release something soon, or, you know, Q1 2020. And it's one of those games, again, that I want to go back and spend more time in, because I loved the world building in that game. Talking about fictional worlds, I couldn't nominate it because it's not a fictional world. It's literally a phenomenal recreation of Washington, D.C. Yes, alternate universe, like giant air quotes, but like the world is almost like a one-to-one recreation of actually what DC is. And that was one of the best trips I think I've ever been on. And thankfully, Brittany and I got to do that trip together, that press trip where Ubisoft flew Brittany and I to Washington, D.C., and they took us to select locations that we got to see then in the game. And going to the Air and Space Museum and then going and doing the Air and Space Museum mission in the game was just like mind-blowing in a way that I was not prepared for. Anyway, that's...
What was that?
That was my Muppets party. Oh, we were there.
We were there. I was like, what did you say?
Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. We're talking about best LFG games. Yeah, yeah. Simer.
I know. I mean, I also picked The Division because I think it was the best in terms of multiplayer. And yes, technically, I don't dabble in the PvP elements of that game. But even small things that they clearly thought about, like, hey, if me, low-level plebe, wants to join friends, I can do that. And not only that, I don't have to, like, run around by myself. So it's like, there are certain games where they don't necessarily think through all elements of the design. So one thing that they did that was, I was like, thank God, you can just teleport to people in your group. So, like, they already had a lot of the checkpoints unlocked. They would just go fast travel there, and then I would warp to them, and I was like, thank God I don't have to actually like try and run to you and figure out where you are because I don't have the checkpoint unlocked yet. So I think a lot of the little things that they did were really nice, very good quality of life for that game.
Agreed.
I didn't play with anyone online.
Brittany's like, I play with no one.
You played with me online once.
I did. That was it.
So,
well, hopefully, 2020 will be a year.
Remember, I messed it up.
More games.
I messed it up, and then we had to start the whole level over.
We made it through.
It was really fast, was so but I done goofed.
That was fun.
On the gears matching.
It was a good bonding experience. But it was fine. We'll fix that in 2020, everybody. We're going to play a game together. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Listen, you've already said that you want to play several games with us that I are of absolutely the spooky variety.
Do. I mean, I do. I am 100% committed verbally. It's just see if we can make it happen.
Listen, there's no RE3s, contract. Whatever multiplayer mode's happening.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Resistance, yeah, okay.
Okay, right. Next up, and this one's a hard one because it's the most emotionally devastating moment of 2019. Now, we are going to make sure that we do our best to make this spoiler-free because we always do. Yep. But sometimes even dancing around it makes it tough. So let's first talk about the games we're discussing, and then people can decide if they want to skip ahead.
I want to briefly mention, because I don't think we'll talk about it a lot here, because we're going to do a spoiler cast for the whole thing, and that is Life is Strange.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Life I do think, too. But I think in general, Life is Strange 2 hits a lot harder, a lot faster than Life is Strange, the original, ever did.
Yes.
And so that's really all I'll say for that, and I think we can really dive into the meat and potatoes of it when we get into our spoiler cast later.
Yes. Yeah. So I have obviously a portion of Life is Strange 2 on here, something from Plague Tale Innocence. Like, it's hard to talk about, right? It's like, well, there's this thing that happens and it hit me right in the heartstrings. But a thing I think I can talk about that's not like super important to the story is Martin Callahan in the Outer Worlds. He's the dude on Groundbreaker, and he has the big helmet on.
Oh, yeah, the big spacer helmet. Mm-hmm. Spacer's Choice.
Yeah, and
so Groundbreaker is
the ship station, like the docking station.
It's like a space station.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he is running a Spacer's Choice store, and he's wearing like a Spacer's Choice helmet with the moon, with the little
top
hat.
It's the moon head, yeah.
Yeah.
So you've seen it, the moon face man and a bunch of marketing materials for the Outer Worlds.
That's Spacer's Choice. Yeah. And this is a really odd one, but it's honestly one of the first ones that came to mind because there's not a particular moment where you're like, oh my God, this is so, oh my God. Because it's not like Life is Strange or something that, or that thing that happens in Plague Tale Innocence, but it's more of like a hint at how corrupt this world is that Spacer's Choice has created in the board as a whole. And there's a terminal on Groundbreaker where you get to read messages between him and his mother. You know, have you gotten to that
point? I haven't looked at it. I could probably, actually, I think I broke into that area and then walked out. So.
Okay, well, I have not gotten
to that. It's a public terminal, and I think it's something you might have to hack. It's like not hidden in any room or anything. It's just kind of like you go past his stand around the corner to the left, and it's like there.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't looked at it.
And there's some correspondence between him and his mom. And if you interact with him, you know, when he's selling his stuff, you can kind of have like off the beaten path conversations with him. And just kind of, you kind of get a feel of what kind of guy he is from that. Like, he's a good guy. He's just trying to, like, do something right and, like, help himself. Maybe, like, get back to his family someday kind of thing. And then you read the correspondence between him and his mom, and there's one line in particular that she sends him after a few lines of emails back and forth, and I still think about it. And it's weird, and I won't say what it is because, like, it just wouldn't have the emotional impact right now anyway. You'd have to have a conversation with him and then read the emails or the correspondence in the terminals. But I was just like, dang, like, that really hit me in a way that I didn't really anticipate it doing, because it's not like there's no animation, there's no cutscene, there's nothing like that. It's just you kind of got to read between the lines, and it's like, dang.
Yeah.
Damn, dude, you're in a tough place right now. And he's an awesome character anyway. Should have nominated him for best NPC.
Now I need to go back and finish that game because I never got to the last mission. Oh, so many games I have to finish.
But that one's it's a doable one.
Yes, it mm-hmm. is. For me, the most emotionally devastating moment was more than one moment, actually, in Sea of Solitude. So this is a small indie game from a very small studio in Europe. My friend Connie runs the studio, and what I loved about Sea of Solitude is that it really had these poignant moments that I think were really relatable to people depending on what point in their life they were. Because, she wrote this about her life and her experience, about, like, this moment she had, like, you know, with her parents or with a lover or with, you know, kids at school. And they were really visceral in a way that I wasn't expecting, and that's why I was so adamant that I get nominated for the Games for Impact category at the Game Awards this year. And I'm so glad that she got nominated. But what we say every year when we talk about this category is, like, it's hard to talk about without really spoiling what happens. But there was things later on in the game when it came to the mother and father dynamic that were particularly impactful for me, knowing that I grew up in a divorced household and had a very different family dynamic growing up than a lot of people do, because my parents got divorced when I was one. And so the idea of understanding what a mother-father dynamic in a relationship was supposed to be was something I never had, never contemplated. And the way that that kind of colors my perspective when you think about who your family is and how your family impacts you from an emotional perspective really kind of made me pause and think. And I think that whenever a video game makes you stop and contemplate, that they've done something right.
No, totally.
I also give a shout out to Arise, A Simple Story, which is something I talked about recently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, I can't talk about it, the moment in particular, because dang, but I was playing it with Jason, and then we both were just kind of sitting there in silence as, like, tears were just, like, streaming down our face. I think that may be the only game that's actually made me, like, cry physical tears this year, but that was pretty damn impactful.
Did you cry non-physical tears?
Well, you know, like, when you puddle up a little bit.
But the drop never actually goes in your cheek.
No.
Yeah. I mean, like, Life is Strange 2 definitely made me cry this year, for sure. And we are going to do a full spoiler cast. I had a fantastic time talking with some of the team from Don't Nod, and we're going to add that onto the spoiler cast. We just wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to play. So if you're listening to this episode thinking, oh, crap, I definitely am not caught up, play all 5 episodes because the spoiler cast is coming soon.
Yeah. This isn't a moment, but I definitely felt more emotionally attached than I was expecting for Death Stranding. I think I talked about this a little bit when I started playing the game, but I just found it really, I find Norman Reedus's character to be very similar to me in a lot of ways. And that both scares me and delights me. And I'm emotionally invested in that story, which is why I will go back to it, because I want to see if and how he grows, because I need to know if there is hope for me or not.
There's always hope for you, Steiner.
But it's interesting watching. Like, I was just sitting there, and a lot of things he was saying, I was like, yes, absolutely. Like, we do not need to be a group. I can manage on my own. Like, leave it alone. Go away. Everybody go away. So I'm curious to see how his tale unfolds. So, like, I can't really spoil anything for you because I haven't finished the game. But I definitely feel I haven't cried yet. I don't know if I will. I haven't cried at any games, I don't think, this year. Even
ever?
Life is Strange.
Or just this year?
No, no, no. Just this year.
Okay.
Just next this year. I've cried at a lot of, like, stupid things on the TV, but not video games.
I cried when I finished Horizon Zero Dawn.
It's a very emotional ending.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... But not even at the emotional part. Just, like, at the end boss
Just, like,
fight.
Knowing it's over.
I was like, you did it.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I crying right now? Oh, my God. Am I on my period? And I'm not. So, I don't know. It just must have been real emotional.
You know what? Sometimes hormones... Friggin' around in there.
You know what I mean? When your emotions get away from you, you're like, what's going on right now?
Oh, listen, yeah. I 100%
life
know
is
what
a roller coaster.
Yeah. I'm gonna
sometimes
ride
you
it
just oh wow, yeah.
Speaking of roller
that.
Coasters, let's talk about the most agonizing choice that you had to make in 2019 in a game. This also sometimes falls under the spoiler category. So I think in order for us, because we probably all agree that we have a unified most agonizing choice pick.
Mine's probably different than yours, but yeah.
Okay. Sure. I know Brittany and I Your have side. The same one from yeah. Gears. So I'm trying to decide if I should do a spoiler warning.
I think we can just, I think
later.
Let's just do a spoiler warning because otherwise it's going to be annoying to try and talk about this without it.
Okay, so what's the game you're talking about?
After Party. It's really not, it's not the same way, but it's a different type of agonizing.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're getting near the end of the show. We're going to put up time codes. If you guys want to hear about the games that surprised us or games we missed, and our game of the years, please check the time codes to skip ahead from these spoilers. But we are going to talk about the ending for Gears 5 and...
After Party.
After Party. You've been warned.
I'd also like to talk about episode 4 of Life is Strange if we've all... Life is
no.
Strange 2. You have not? Okay, then I won't do that. Don't
okay.
look at my notes.
So we'll skip that one and we'll come back to during our spoiler cast.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. You've been warned.
Warnings have
warned
been.
Is done. Warning is done.
Okay, Steimer, let's start with After Party.
So this is not as serious of a one, but it did. I was like, so at the very end of After Party, you challenge Satan to this drinking game. I absolutely suck at these drinking mini games. I'm terrible at them.
So how did
I try
work?
My best. So each one's different. So there's beer pong, and it kind of like. You have the trajectory, but
hard.
It's hard because the trajectory isn't, it's like this big when the actual line is this big. So you kind of have to like figure out what it would be in your head. And then as you drink, it makes it wobblier and it's harder to control.
Sounds and like real life, man.
I've never played beer pong in real life, but yes. I feel like.
Are you hearing this, Andrea? Okay. We have to rectify this immediately.
I think it's the thing I'm fine dying without doing.
No, we'll do beer pong.
It'll
with
be
Prosecco.
Fun.
It'll be great.
I mean, sure.
Okay, no, sorry. Sorry. Okay, continue.
The other one is something where you're doing shots and trying to stack them. You're trying to stack the shot glasses to a certain height.
You've also never played this game either?
No, of course not. I don't play drinking games. I don't want to die. I weigh 5 pounds.
And so, you're not going to die.
I almost died once drinking with you all night.
Oh, well
she's
not. I
definitely had alcohol poisoning. Okay, so.
Continue on.
Anyways.
She's like, I don't talk about that.
At the end of After Party, you're challenging Satan. Uh-huh. And it's beer pong. And then after the beer pong, you're teleported away to play the fucking shot stacking game, which I was okay at beer pong. I only managed to win at the preview event. When I actually played the game, I never won, but I was close. It was always that front cup. That front cup would get me. But the stacking one, horrendous. Absolute garbage at. Couldn't stack these shot glasses to save my life. And so at the end of After Party, you can choose to give up.
Whoa.
And I gave up.
Wow.
Wait, at the very end of the game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could choose
to
just like...
You can choose to walk away from
to
this.
To stay in hell.
To stay in hell.
Wow.
And I chose to stay in hell because I couldn't do the fucking shot glass.
No, what?
I couldn't. I was like, look, I'm not going to sit here for an indefinite amount of time trying to stack these stupid things. I'll just accept my fate. And I did. And
so,
it's funny. Okay.
So you can either fail in the mini games or give up. And that means you have to stay in hell.
You can succeed at the mini games if you're better than I am.
Right. But okay. So my question is like, you can either succeed at the mini games or you fail at the mini games or you can just choose to give up altogether.
So he will give you infinite chances on that last time.
Oh, okay.
You didn't think you would ever be able to do
I
it?
I didn't want to do
like,
it.
Fuck the
I
shit
was,
o'clock.
You're
I'm
just
done.
Like, I'm,
I did it like,
I'm just in hell now.
I did it like 4 times and was like,
done.
I'm making the choice.
And there's something you can do to make it easier, right? It's just
I don't think so. I didn't actually mess around in the settings. But I don't know. I mean, I just gave up. And I'm curious to see who else did too.
You know, that's interesting because I thought maybe that final confrontation would come down to the choices you made, the people you talked to.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, and the annoying part too is so you always you like have to recruit a certain number of people to participate in these games with you, and then I'm pretty sure all of them would nope out. So then you're just stuck, like it's just the two of you anyway. And I'm like, why did you even bother recruiting these people who aren't going to participate? If you're going to say you're going to play beer pong. Don't back out the last second and leave me with an empty spot where someone else's turn is happening and I can't do anything. It's annoying.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyways, I stayed in hell and it was an agonizing choice, but I decided it was the best for me and my sanity.
When you think about it, kind of existentially, of like, do I stay in hell or not? Like, it's way deeper than you probably think it is. Like, you're like, I gave up on this mini game to stay in hell for the rest of my life. But we're gonna like put that aside.
Yeah,
because I do want to talk about what Brittany and I agreed was our most agonizing choice, which was the end of Gears 5. So we already gave you the spoiler warning. So that aside, Gears 5 focused on Kate and Del and how they were on this quest to find out why Kate is having these weird visions of the Locust and her ancestry with her grandmother and her mother being part of the Locust. And we find some really amazing world building things throughout the journey of Gears 5. Most importantly, that Kate's grandmother was Mira, like the head of the Locust and the person who kind of like made the Locust threat what it was and the big boss who fought in Gears 3. So, Brittany, the end was
that
a choice.
When Mira has JD and Del.
So it's not Mira.
It's not Mira.
It's Reyna.
Reyna.
So we think, so Reyna is Kate's mother. We think that she's dead at the end of Gears 4.
Mira, Reyna.
Yeah.
Got it.
And she comes back as part of like this Locust, like kind of reincarnation thing. Not technically reincarnation. Don't like at me about like the semantics of it all. But it's essentially like her body with Mira's kind of soul inside of her. And so it's the illusion that Reyna is alive when in reality she's not, because Kate killed her at the end of Gears 4, right?
Yeah, I can never remember Gears lore straight. I don't know what it is.
I don't blame you. I had to read a bunch of wikis after the game ended to keep it all straight because of all of the – and they did a really good job of doing backstory for people who were already familiar with it. But if you weren't, then you were like – what is like this weird laboratory and why were they experimenting on these kids? And there was a lot of it that was like hard to follow.
That's the thing, is I played all of them, but for some, all I remember is like, I had a great time with that game. It was fun. Next. And I just forget all the story, which
that's
sucks.
A lot of Gears games. I think they did a better job this one of making memorable lore moments than they have in the past. Like they've had them before, but I think that laboratory in particular was like a,
really interesting
tidbit that they had in that game.
Yeah. Anyhow. So at the very end of the game, Reyna comes back as like the head of the Locust. When we thought that she was dead, that Kate successfully killed her to prevent her from assimilating into the Locust hive mind. But turns out, nope.
Joke's on you.
Didn't happen.
Didn't work.
But like, it's not Reyna as we know her. It's literally like the soul of Mira inside of Reyna because of this weird hive mind thing that's happening. And she grabs Del, who has been there helping you, playing alongside of you the entire game, and also grabs JD, who you've had some very contentious moments with throughout the game. And for the first time in the Gears of War franchise, you have to make a narrative choice that's going to impact how the game plays out. That in and of itself made me angry. The fact that there were people who were conflicted about who to choose made me even angrier. But this is why we nominated it as our most agonizing choice. So, Brittany, who did you choose?
I mean, Dell, of course.
You saved Dell.
Saved Dell.
Yes. I also saved Dell without question.
So, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's why I didn't have it as my most agonizing choice. Well, was because for me, I was instantly like, Dell. I saved Dell.
Well, I knew I was going to save Dell, but it was still that hesitation moment of, oh my God, can I save both of them? Like, can I aim the knife at her face? Like, right? What can I do to do this?
Yeah, right? Like, why did...
I think it was a knife, right?
Yeah. Also, Gears, why are you making me make this choice?
Yeah, it was weird.
And it was a bizarre choice because... You know, I was in the comments after we did our spoiler cast on this game, and a lot of people were like, well, I picked JD because Marcus has been around, and I feel bad for Marcus, you know.
That's more of a choice for Marcus than it is for JD then. Like, yeah, it's
What about Cole, right? Like, he's still alive.
Yeah, Cole's awesome. Coltrane!
Coltrane, choo-choo. But no, it was...
It was just more of like, poor Marcus, this kid was like the only thing he really had left of Anya.
But maybe some people just didn't care about Dell. They're like, okay, Marcus is like the true star of this franchise.
And he is the loin of... We're going to do...
Exactly. We're going to do what makes Marcus happy.
The loin fruit.
The loin fruit. Sam, I really like that. I think I'm going to... That's my phrase of 2020. The loin fruit.
I feel like
fruit.
You've said it before. Have you not?
I don't know. Maybe. Uh-huh. I like it.
Anyways.
So, I mean, obviously, it was like, I know I'm going to pick Dell, but damn. And then seeing Marcus's face when you have to talk to him.
That was like, sad. I was like, I'm so sorry. I killed your son. Mostly because he was kind of a dick sometimes.
Yeah. And then, I know, like, they have their
moment. Dell's been my boy the whole, like, yeah, I can't not
Dell
pick him.
Dell saves your life. Yeah. Right? Like, the idea that you would let him die to let JD live. And, like, I very much appreciate the people who wrote in when we did the spoiler cast to be like, this is why I chose JD. I do.
The main fruit.
We're just going to have to respectfully agree to disagree.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting because it makes you wonder, going into Gear 6, what's going to be canon? You know, are they going to have a canon? Yeah. They've even said, like, Marcus won't die. Like, Marcus is, like...
So, Marcus has the plot armor.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Anyhow.
I've read a lot of very convincing... fan theories about why killing Dell and saving JD is going to be the canon choice, which bums me out because I think when you think about mainline Gears, Marcus is clearly the star. And if they want to continue that, they can't keep Dell. They have to keep JD.
Which is, and then it's sort of silly to have even had that choice in there at all.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
That's the thing that makes me mad.
Yeah, it's just like, if you wanted to kill Dell, just kill Dell.
Make the choice.
I think, I wonder if you looked at it statistically, how many people saved Dell versus saving JD. Have they ever released that? I don't think
they have not.
And I'm like wondering if they're like, oh no, everyone saved, like almost, you know. I wonder which way it skewed. Like, maybe everybody did pick JD and we're like the few people that picked Dell. But I don't know.
They just should never have made it a choice.
No.
Because that's not part of what Gears is as a series, is making these narrative choices along the way, choosing your path and creating your own outcome. That's not what Gears is. And when they did that, it made me angry on a variety of fronts, which we've covered. Thank you.
But yeah, maybe he'll come back as a zombie in Resident Evil.
No, not. Wait,
who?
JD?
Can't happen for a while. But yeah, I'm just being weird.
That's fine. JD can be a zombie.
But that was the thing, too. I'm like, is he going to come back? I'm like, oh, no, he's dead. He's not coming back.
He's dead for sure.
I mean, yeah.
Well, unless they all right, our second to the last category, games that surprised you. What's the / games we missed part of this?
Probably,
I think it's just like anything that we thought we were maybe wanting to play.
It sounds like these should be two different categories, maybe. But game that surprised me. I have a couple.
Okay, Simon, do you have one?
No, I forgot to write this category down. So.
Okay, so Brittany, you start.
Okay. First one is Life is Strange 2, because I didn't know how well I would relate to two brothers who, you know, suddenly shit hits the fan and now they're going and off doing their own little wolf thing. And yeah, and you know, to be completely honest, like, at first I was like, oh, do I have to play this? Obviously I love the first Life is Strange and I love Before the Storm, but that was more relatable to me as a narrative game. You know, like, I really related to Max a lot, and then now I have these two bros and I never had a sibling. I never was a man, you know, so it's like, I was like, oh, this is whatever. I'll see how it goes. And then, I mean, it really got me. I binged the last four episodes and then I still need to play the fifth one. But it really surprised me how much I really connected with that and how much I cared about that little bro, man. I didn't think I would. I didn't think I would, because like I've never been someone who's particularly liked kids, who's had patience for kids. But I really found that watching after Daniel really was like, okay, kid, like stay within my line of sight. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure you turn out to be a good human to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm glad that you bring that up, though, because when I first did the panel for Life is Strange in the summer of 2018, when we did our Life is Strange activation with Square Enix and Don't Nod at PAX West, I also had that question. We posed it to the audience of like, can you trust this team that you're going to love these characters the way that you love the character of the original Life is Strange, knowing that they wrote these characters that you have fallen in love with? Can you trust them that they're going to write these new characters that you're going to love just as much? And I also was very hesitant because it was a brother dynamic. And as a woman, I didn't have that same connection. Even though I do have a sibling, but me and my sibling have a very different relationship than Sean and Daniel have in the game. And I'm with you that they brought it home in a way that I say is surprising, but also isn't surprising, because I trusted them to do it the first time. And of course, they brought it home the second time.
I don't think it was the brother thing for me. I think it was just the age of Daniel, because I think that's more of the thing that I worried about going into Life is Strange, because as you said, Brittany, I find children to be very annoying.
And they're often used as a crutch in games.
Yeah. And yeah, they're usually very obvious, blunt emotional tools, which is just like, oh, correct, look. Yeah. And so it irritates me to no end, and I can't stand it. That's why for me, I was like, I haven't actually finished all the episodes yet, but I'm sure it will be fine.
Do you have one?
I do, but it's a very different kind of game.
Okay.
That's fine.
And the reason it surprised me is because I generally don't like golf games.
Oh, but the golf.
What the golf was a game that I really liked.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I found it so intriguing, and if you aren't familiar, What the Golf is a game available on Apple Arcade that you can play on your iPhone. And I liked it because it took the traditional golf mechanics, but also kind of flipped it on its head, because they're like, we're not just going to have you swinging a golf club at a ball down a green. We're going to have you doing the swing back mechanic, hitting a variety of objects across a variety of air quote courses that aren't really courses. So like, instead of just swinging and hitting a ball down a green, you might be swinging and hitting like a house across like a field.
Yeah.
And it's like tumbling in this like weird mechanics way. And that's just like one random example. But I think what they did from a physics and mechanics perspective, from a video game development angle, was so unique and so different. And I would encourage anybody who has not played it, that has Apple Arcade or has been interested in trying Apple Arcade, to check out What the Golf. And was a game that I really enjoyed. And props and shout out to my husband for showing it to me, because I probably would have overlooked it, because there's just so many games on mobile these days. And he was playing it incessantly, and so I started playing it and was like, okay, this is actually super cool.
The other game I want to give a shout out to is Outward. I talked about this game a lot earlier this year. I haven't played it in a long time, but I'm still thinking about the game. Like, literally every week, Jason, like, we should play Outward again. But, you know, it at the time, I'm sure it's hopefully been patched since, but it didn't run incredibly well. It didn't look super great. But there was so much heart poured into that game. It reminded me, you know, of games that I feel like a lot of developers are scared to make, of, in the sense that it doesn't hold your hand. You can build a broken character. You know, it can be incredibly hard, incredibly punishing.
Broken in a good way or broken in a bad way?
In a good way.
Okay.
In a good way, in the sense that it's like, oh, I screwed my character up in this build, but I can work really hard to like fix it again. You know, kind of like MMOs have really streamlined the leveling process. So yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And it really reminded me of Asheron's Call, rip in peace, in the sense that it's just like, here's this big world.
I love how much you love that dorky old game.
Oh, I
just love that she says rip in peace, even though the P stands for peace.
I know.
That's what she likes to say it, though.
It is. I like to troll. But no, shout out to Outward. It's a really great game. And then also Judgment. I'd only ever played Yakuza 0 before Judgment, and then obviously Judgment is, you know, just basically like Yakuza, and that is like my top 5 game of the year for this year. I could not stop playing that thing. It's so quirky, so silly, and I still think you should try it.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't know if you'd like it.
No, she wouldn't.
No. No, no, Japan.
That's not up for her.
Yeah,
thing.
It's not my
so
thing.
Crazy. It's like, so the new trees is cities. See?
Or wait, now you're sick of cities?
I don't like cities in games, generally.
Generally, I cannot roll my eyes into my head far enough.
Generally, because
dislike both trees.
No,
and
I like
cities.
Trees now.
Okay,
I don't mind trees now.
So you've the pendulum has swung the other way.
No, no, I've always had a thing with cities too. Realistic settings, like generally, don't get my float boat. My boat floating.
I like your float boating.
My float boating
doesn't blow her skirt up, is what she's trying to say.
It doesn't turn my crank, flip my switch, sharpen my pencil, brighten my sky. But yeah, Judgment's great. Also, it's part of the quirkiness of the Japanese setting that I love. I know. I'll tell you the reason I didn't like Watch Dogs is because of the freaking setting of the city. I'll tell you that.
Listen, and then probably it's okay to just not like San Francisco.
3 years from now, I'll probably love it and I'll get a collector's edition too.
But will they still be cheaper?
It's true. Bad.
Yeah. Did you have a game that surprised you?
It's not really, I mean, yes and no. This is actually sort of both a surprise slash missed because I couldn't really finish it because I suck at it. That's Indivisible. And I love
that game is tough.
That I love the art. I love even the story of what's happening with it. I just can't play
oh,
it.
Oh, this one.
Yes, yeah, so
it's so pretty.
Oh, no, I played this. Well, I watched
so
you play
it. So it was a Kickstarter game. It's a side-scrolling action RPG that's also turn-based.
Yeah.
And
it's like,
they're kind of doing a mashup. And I don't want to use the term Metroidvania because it's not a Metroidvania, but they do use some slight elements of platforming. And what's really cool about it is that you have like this like team that you can use their individual. I mean, like I don't want to say it's like old Final Fantasies, but it kind of is in certain ways. The way they match up genres is
Child
kind of hard
of
to describe.
Child of Light is the best comparison I can think of it to in terms of gameplay structure.
Okay.
Because the combat is similar in that, yes, it's kind of turn-based, but it's also not entirely turn-based. It's more based on like a countdown of what's happening versus like it's your turn. Like, it doesn't do that,
right?
And it is a little more action oriented in that way. So yeah, I think it's the combat is much more similar to Child of Light, which I don't know if you played. God, I loved that game. It was so good. And actually I think even like platforming wise it's kind of similar, because yeah, you'd run around and sometimes track back, but not all the time.
If we're talking about games we missed this year that we wanted to play, for me, the kind of number one game that I missed that I did not play a single minute of as a qualifier, like not that you started and you want to finish, but sure, a game that you played nothing of that you want to play, was Greedfall. Because I heard a lot about this RPG saying that it felt very BioWare-like and combined a lot of elements from different RPGs that really kind of came together, even though it had its flaws because of clearly budgetary constraints. It's still a game that I want to go try and eventually spend some time with.
Yeah, that's my top one too, because I put maybe like 3 hours into it. And I was like, oh, it's so good. And then I don't know what came out. Something came out and then I just never played it. I never played Sekiro. I don't know if it's the kind of game that I would really,
I think you would hate it.
I think I would too.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah, I don't want to get angry. I'm looking at top games of 2019. Didn't hop into Apex.
Also a game you would never play.
Yeah, that is the antithesis of
Mortal Kombat 11 is just, I'm sad I missed that one.
But you don't have to miss it because you can play the single player campaign on very easy. And just
either, Andrea, but you see Horizon came up and it was like, hey, bitch, you've been meaning to play me for
Horizon,
a couple years.
I'm glad you played.
Yes, yeah, thank goodness you at least did that, because Horizon 2 is hopefully coming next year. I am hoping this like rumored PlayStation 5 event that's happening in February is real, and that they just like boom, Horizon Zero Dawn 2
dynamite
is like launch title for PS5. That's what I'm hoping for, even though I think Ghost of Tsushima is probably better.
Actually, we keep getting off on tangents.
I just want to say real quick, I'm really excited now that I finished it and I love it, so we can all be excited about it together.
Perfect. We'll talk about it more
before. I'd be like, trees,
next year. Okay, so Simer, do you have a game you missed you want to talk about, or should we move on to our game of the year?
Similar vein is Disco Elysium, the other RPG.
Yes,
that we were talking about.
So many people talking about Disco Elysium.
So I would like to hop in there and give it a go.
It got a lot of nominees at the Game Awards that I was not expecting. And maybe it's just because I didn't have anybody in my circle literally all year talk to me about playing Disco Elysium. Literally zero people. And that's tragic not only for the developers of that game, but also for the idea that whoever is marketing that game, I don't know if they just like miss this wide swath of people who are in the games media business, or if they chose to go a very small route, or if they did a targeted RPG crowd or what. But like, I never played this game in a preview event. I never saw it at a convention or a show. I never heard anything about this game before this year. I maybe heard it in passing, and then it wasn't until we got our ballot for the final nominees for the Game Awards that I was like, it was nominated in like five categories. And I was like, what is this game? That's wild. That's never happened to me in my entire career of working in video games.
A sleeper hit, if you will.
Sleeper hit.
The biggest sleeper hit of all time, Disco Elysium.
Kind of reminds me of Oberdin last year. Remember, that game was also everywhere.
Yeah. But I feel like Oberdin, at least I heard about. I just never got around to playing. But I knew that it was a thing because it was from the same team that did Papers, Please. And so I had heard about it and was like, okay, I should play this. I should check it out. Still want to play it and check it out. Now it's on Switch, so it should be easier. Mm-hmm. But Disco Elysium was just a game that just whooshed right over my head all year long.
Over my head.
All right. Yep. Let's talk about games that didn't go over our head, that were our focus and our love. Let's talk about our personal game of the year for 2019.
Bet no one can guess mine.
Well, you go first then.
Obviously, I'm going
to. You don't need your laptop to talk about your game of the year.
It's restarting. I don't know what's happening.
It's having a connection.
I'm obviously picking Kingdom Hearts 3.
Lol.
That's hilarious. No, I mean, obviously, Resident Evil 2, I think. You even voted it for your game of the year.
I did.
Yeah, and that's incredible. I think that speaks volumes. I know. I think if Summer had played it, she would have loved it just as much.
Did play it. Just didn't finish it.
You need to get that $5 DLC, girl.
Yeah.
But no, the fact that that Capcom took a game that everyone had been wanting a remake of, you know, for so long, and the game came out in like 98, and modernized it to a way that appealed not only to lifelong fans, but to people like Andrea, who was like, I don't like being scared. Why do I want to play this? Oh my God, I can't stop playing this. You know, like, I think that just speaks so much to the quality of the game and just the little tidbits of helpfulness that Capcom implemented with the map specifically. You know, there's a lot of rooms and a lot of corridors and things to find in this game. And, you know, the little like, okay, if you want to get into this door, you need this key. And if you want this item, it's here. What are you going
to
say?
Back in my day, we had to get pen and paper and we would make the map ourselves.
Yeah.
It's true.
RE2's map back then was
not for that. I did for Quest for Glory. I definitely made
it. Absolutely. That's what you had to do, man. But no, it's just, I think, a masterpiece on multitude of levels. And I'm just thrilled. And obviously, we're getting Resident Evil 3. And I pulled our community, like, what are you most looking forward to next year? And, like, RE3 was in, like, 90% of all the responses. And that game was just formally announced, like, weeks ago. So it's just exciting that, you know, people are including that in conversations of Tila 2 and Cyberpunk. Like, yeah, Capcom. You did the thing really good. Not a lot of people can do that.
Good job.
Okay, Simer?
Okay.
Oh, do you want me to
go? You go ahead.
So, this was a really tough category. As Brittany mentioned, I did vote for Resident Evil 2 Remake when we were voting for the Game Award nominees. But while I think that is an absolute Game of the Year game, it's not my personal.
There's a difference.
Game of the Year. I don't even know if I have a standout for personal Game of the Year this year because I just have had such a weird year that I haven't really gravitated toward one game. But the game that I have enjoyed the most and I've played the most is definitely still Destiny 2 Shadowkeep. And I know earlier in the episode, I kept saying Forsaken mistakenly. And hopefully, if you're listening, you aren't completely infuriated at me. Being like, oh my God, Andrea, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Forsaken, that was last year's expansion. So Shadowkeep was this big overhaul for Destiny. And Destiny 2 really going through this transformation, having Bungie as a developer break ties from Activision this year, that was a huge moment, and seeing how they really transformed from a studio that was kind of, I don't want to say they were shackled by the restrictions of Activision, but kind of they were, in how they could communicate with their community. And I love how they've changed, and I love how more open they are, and everything that the entire team at Bungie is doing to work with their community and say, we want to make this game for people who are still playing it. I've never gravitated towards a live service game like I have with Destiny, and I've been with Destiny since it launched in 2014 and have just really lived and breathed this live service game in a way that I haven't with any other. And clearly I'm not as hardcore as many other players are. I haven't logged in a couple of weeks, which says something.
Gasp, how dare you?
No, it is like a gasp. I missed almost the entire season of The Undying, which is crazy. But it's because, like, life happens. But what I love about Destiny, though, is that it doesn't punish people who have been away. And that's what's tough for me about other live service games that I love, like Rainbow Six Siege. I think that whenever I go back to that game, I feel so woefully underprepared for that game because of how specific that game is to knowing the map and knowing the operators and having to know very specific things that you don't need to know in Destiny. You can still have a lot of fun playing individual seasons of Destiny without having played hours and hours and hours of the previous season of content. And that's tough to do from a developer standpoint, is how do we keep our millions of registered users or people who've logged in once coming back? And I think that's why we always nominate Epic Games for what they do with Fortnite, and how they deserve, you know, like a round of applause for being able to keep their hundreds of millions of registered users engaged. But I digress. So Shadowkeep was great for me because it brought me back to Destiny in a way that I was kind of frustrated with. I'd kind of, like, you know,
it's
stayed away.
It's kind of saga. I love always asking from 1 to 10, where are you?
Yeah.
A little gauge.
And if I had to sit down on any given day and boot up a game, it was always like, I just want to keep playing Destiny, even though I'm supposed to be playing Control, or I'm supposed to be playing Death Stranding, or I'm supposed to be playing this game, this game, this game, this game. I just want to keep playing Destiny. And that to me means that this game has had an impact on me that any other game has not. And that's why it's my personal game of the year.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I think for me, what you would think I would pick is probably The Outer Worlds.
Yeah.
It's very much a me game. However, I feel like I'm not picking that this year.
Ooh.
Because the game that took most of my headspace was a surprise to me as well. It was a game I wasn't even originally going to play. You, Andrea, were like, I have this code. Do you want it? And I was like, I guess.
I know exactly what game this is.
And it's Fire Emblem.
Yeah, girl.
And I had never really played a Fire Emblem game that I can remember. There was a game Greg and I played on our
Vitas?
On our Vitas, but I can't remember if it was a Fire Emblem or a something else.
Pretty was sure it
Fire
a Persona Emblem game?
No.
Fire Emblem, I think, has been Nintendo.
Oh, maybe that's right. You're correct.
It I mean, I'm not familiar with
Fire Emblem. Is a Nintendo exclusive.
Yeah, right. I'm not familiar with, like, the handhelds.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay. No, you're right. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Mm-hmm. It just was,
probably with a JRPG that was similar.
Yeah, I think it was just a similar style. And because it had, like, the whole troop mechanic kind of similar how Fire Emblem does. Anyway, digressing. So this was my very first Fire Emblem game, and I didn't really know what I was getting into, and ended up just falling down that rabbit hole head first, loving every minute of it. It definitely has a very light Persona-like sort of... I really don't even know if I would call it.
No, I know what you're saying. I agree with you.
It's not really, but...
But you have those moments where
you have those moments, more of character development and, like, trying to do time management when you have the ability to like, okay, well, who can I possibly talk to, or what are all the things that I can get done? What's the most efficient way of doing this with my free time? Which sounds stressful, and sometimes so is, fun, but though. It's also so satisfying at the same time. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Why isn't real life that much fun?
It is sometimes. If you really, like, complete your to-do list, whew, that feels really good.
Yeah, but not getting those S ranks.
Yeah, it's harder. But I think the characters were fleshed out beautifully. Mm-hmm. I think there is absolutely incentive to go back and play this game and pick the other houses. I think that they did a really nice job with the narrative and the way that it branched and showing you different elements of the story. I think your character was really interesting, and I think her or his or her arc is absolutely fascinating. And you really learn more, again, depending on which house you've chosen. At some houses, I think if you pick that, like, you really don't have an idea of who you are as much as you will if you pick the other ones. So the fact that you kind of have to, I mean, or you can just look it up on the internet. Okay, yeah. That's also
or
an option.
Or just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. If you don't have the time, that's also totally acceptable. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact that they have, you know, different settings. So traditional Fire Emblem is you recruit these people, you take them into battle. If the unit falls, it's dead. It's gone forever. I didn't play that way because I don't need that much stress in my life. And so then this game, they had the mode where they basically just faint like a Pokemon.
Yeah.
And you can just pick back up and carry on where you were. It's great. Especially, God, can you imagine if your love interest... I actually gasped. So there was one time I was playing this on a plane and I had been just dominating all of the main battles because I level grind. I over level grind.
So sad.
To a stupid degree. But there was this one character in this one battle that was just kicking my butt. And I audibly, like, gasped to the point where people looked at me on the plane because Sylvain died.
Her husbando.
My husbando fell in battle. And even though I knew he wasn't going to be gone forever, it shocked me. It just shocked me to my core. And I was like, oh my, like, I did that. And then I think Jackie was sitting next to me on the plane. She's like, what? What? And like, I saw other people turn around and I was like, because I have my Bose noise canceling headphones on. I have no idea how loud I am. And I was like, it's fine.
My computer boyfriend just temporarily passed
he's
out.
He's just sleeping. It's okay. But yeah, so there was a lot of emotional stakes invested in this game from that.
I remember when you and I did our spoiler cast, how excited we were to talk to each other about it.
Yeah, the whole universe was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun to talk about with your friends. And even at work, a lot of people were really obsessed with this game. We made a whole Slack channel for it. Like, everybody wanted, like, it was just almost a movement, a Fire Emblem movement. And yes, it was really fun to be part of and to have other people who also didn't really have any, you know, history with the mm-hmm. series join in and enjoy it. So I think Fire Emblem was such a delightful surprise for me this year that it has to be my game of the year.
You gonna hop in that DLC next year?
Probably not, because it's story driven. Though
I know that's the hard part. We should have nominated them for best DLC because they have been supporting the game.
Yeah,
with a lot of stuff. And next year there is story coming. But
yes,
I don't know.
It's so good.
So we got Resident Evil 2, Fire Emblem, and Destiny 2.
Destiny 2, Shadowkeep. Yeah.
All right. Last year was basically God of War and Red Dead Redemption 2.
It was without question God of War last year for me. And that's what was hard about this year, because I played some really great games, and Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order was up there for me as a game that I thought about, like, game of the year quality, but they just had one too many technical problems, mm-hmm. and there was a couple of things that I wish they had done differently, but...
Capital F, fine.
Yeah. And, like, Sekiro, which... We never talked about it, but, like, I do not understand how it won Game of the Year at the Game Awards... Purely from the standpoint that it won literally no other categories, and if it was supposed to be Game of the Year, it should have won.
Didn't it? I feel like that's happened before, though.
At the Game Awards?
Because we've had this discussion where it's been like, it's so weird that this thing won and it won nothing else.
Yeah, it's like, if you don't think that Sekiro had the best art direction, the best narrative, the best combat design, the best whatever, but you think it's the Game of the Year, like, what's happening?
I like to see the breakdown from Keeley. I wonder if we could ever get that in.
I specifically asked him for it this year because I knew that it would be contested if Death Stranding won, knowing his relationship with Kojima. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that was frustrating to me. I mean, short aside, he has no influence on any of the voting or any of the winners. It's all... blind to him. It's all jury based. You can read all about it on the Game Awards website. But I said it would be cool if we could just, like, even if we don't give exact numbers, if we could see, like, this game won this margin over this game, or it was a really close race in these categories. I think it just would be interesting for people to see what the votes were.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I'll think about it. I was like, okay.
That means no thank you.
But I understand the complications from his perspective as a guy who runs the awards of saying, like, well, if I release, like, the actual votes.
Even percentage breakdown, though, would be fun.
Well, percentage breakdown, yeah. But no other award show does that.
No other award show releases the votes for
a variety of reasons. I think the most important being you don't want a creator to get a sense of insecurity about their product because a vote was skewed one way or another.
Good.
I'm joking, being an asshole. And I was like, you're not wrong. That's smart. So
knowing what we know about 2020, we should make a prediction as to what we think our game of the year will be.
Ooh, I like this new tradition. What at this time next year will my game of the year be?
I'm so torn. Because obviously I'm a Resident Evil fan, but as much as I love Capcom, they're not storytellers like Naughty Dog, right? Or CD Projekt Red.
Do you really think The Last of Us Part II is going to be your game of the year?
And this is the thing, I
say that not as like the game is going to be bad because I think the game's going to be phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I say this as I know you, Brittany. I don't think this is going to be your game of the year.
Yeah, I don't know that it would be yours either.
It's hard to say because Resident Evil 3, I mean, Resident Evil 2, like, granted, like, I fucking love the game, right? It was my game of the year, critically and personally. But granted, like, Resident Evil 3, I feel like, as of right now, from what I know at this moment, they are going to be expanding on certain story points and characters are going to be kind of reinvented. But if you look at the story told by Capcom of Resident Evil 2 and what the story could be of Tilu 2 or CD Projekt Red could tell with Cyberpunk, I'm such a story-driven biatch that if those stories knock me off my socks or blow up my skirt, I could easily pick one of those.
What about Final Fantasy VII Remake and what they're doing to change the story of that game?
That could also be it too. But the other thing, the weird wrench with that is that's just like the first segment of Final Fantasy VII. And I don't know. That's why it's so hard right now.
What about the other zombie parkour game?
Dying Light 2.
My brain, like, I was like, I can't remember the name.
I think that could be a dark horse candidate, much like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Now I'm stressed because I got Dying Light 2, Final Fantasy 7, RE3, Tilu, and Cyberpunk.
I honestly think of all of those that Dying Light has the best chance of being your goatee for next year. I really do. Because what we saw from Techland at E3 looked phenomenal.
Not to mention that as co-op.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that will.
I don't know.
That's my guess.
And it's got a morality system.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we guess for each other?
Okay.
Because, like, I do think that would be yours.
I don't know if you're going to guess what I would think mine is, though. But we could. How about this? How about we each.
Destiny 2.
How about everybody pick one? 3. No. And then we'll say what our actual is, even though Brittany went first. So. I would have guessed that Final Fantasy VII Remake would be yours, but now that we've talked about Dying Light too,
I picked the Dying Light, so I think
I don't even know myself. I'm sorry, I can't hold up my end of the bargain.
Okay, so before I tell you what mine probably is going to be, you tell me what you think mine is going to be. This isn't what I would vote on as like critic Andrea Renee voting for Game of the Year. This would be like what I spent the most time and I enjoy the most.
Again, I think it's Destiny. I think it's whatever iteration
Destiny.
Whatever iteration of Destiny happens to
Let's
come
put
out
Destiny
next
aside.
Year.
Okay.
Let's put I'm Destiny trying to think aside. Of another shooter that's coming out next year that but I'm blanking on a lot of games. Have we said the name yet?
No, because it's not technically announced yet.
Oh, well, that's cheating.
It's not really cheating. So the game that I think will be my goatee next year is
Assassin's
Creed Ragnarok.
Duh. Okay, that should have been a duh because there's like 15 Assassin's Creed.
We
statues.
Talked about it in the most anticipated episode.
Yes, my memory recall is that of a gnat. It's terrible.
Sarah doesn't remember what she did last week.
I don't. Like, people send me quotes of stuff I've said on the show, and I'm like, I do not remember saying that.
So the reason why I think that it will be my favorite is because I love what they've been building on with Origins and Odyssey, and Ragnarok as a setting intrigues me more than both Origins and Odyssey. And so I think this will have me like... Dude. All in.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. And to be clear, we don't know if this game is actually coming out in 2020. I hope it is, based off how Ubisoft has been doing Assassin's Creed releases over the last couple of years. It makes sense that it would be it's been heavily rumored that like this Norse mythology is going to be the setting. And I'm kind of like, I feel like this could be cheated as like, my go-to for next year.
Okay, so are we talking personal or critical?
Personal. Because critical for me would probably be cyberpunk.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it'll be cyberpunk or Tulu, depending on which one turns out better.
Motherfucker. I don't think this is fucking hard.
Personal.
Okay. Am I picking for you? I'm still thinking about myself right now.
Well, I mean, you could pick for me if you want. But I've already told you what my pick is.
I know. You might be wrong about yourself.
That's what I said. I said if there's another Destiny iteration, I think that might
be. Okay, so what were you going to say?
Oh, I don't know. I was still thinking about myself. I'm being selfish right now.
Dimer, what's yours?
I don't know. I do think it'll be a toss-up between the two big hitters of Tulu or Cyberpunk. I think I will be boring.
That's not boring.
Boring in the sense that I'm not adding
studios
super like fun or innovative to the conversation. But I also do think that Dying Light looks really interesting to me, and that could be a sleeper hit for me.
Brittany's sleeper hit that she's not thinking of is Halo Infinite.
No, I was tossing that around in my head. I mean,
that won't be for me. I mean, I'll play it.
No, you're not a Halo person.
Me. It's fine. It's capital F. Fine.
Next year is going to be so fucking awesome.
Next year is kind of insane.
Okay, personally, I think RE3 will be my game of the year. I know me. You throw me in Raccoon City, Advanced Brad Vickers. What the fuck is that? But that's a thing. Yeah, I think personal will be RE3.
I think that you are putting more stock in it than you normally would, because I think the impact of RE2 as a remake was high. I think the impact for RE3 as a remake will be low, which is why they announced it so close to its release, because it's not going to be as like, oh my gosh, the polish, the innovation, all of this, because they're essentially just now building off of what they already built for RE2.
I think that's now a given and expected, and that's going in my calculation. I think what I'm most excited about is the building of the lore and the setting of RE3. Mm-hmm. You know, taking a PS1 game that you can now put onto a PS4 and expand the city and expand the story of this
game. You just want more toilet paper in corners.
I do, because I want to tell that fucking story with toilet paper storytelling.
Do you think at all that there's a possibility that Breath of the Wild 2 is coming out next year?
Yes, I think there's a possibility.
And you think that there's no chance that Breath of the Wild 2 is going to make your list?
There's a chance, but they have to innovate from what they've done with Breath of the Wild. I like Breath of the Wild, not my favorite Zelda game.
But you don't think that RE3 is in the same boat?
They've already talked about what they're doing with RE3.
My game of the year is definitely going to be Animal Crossing.
I was going to mention Animal Crossing, but I knew that Brittany's not an Animal Crossing person.
I mean, I don't even know if it's true. I might hate it, but
I might hate it too, but I'm in the same boat. I can either love it and it could become our next obsession.
This will either be something we play until we die, or it will be something we don't care for at all. No, but I mean,
this is the thing. Like, the rumors regarding Breath of the Wild 2 is that it's used the same engine and more like the same landscape. But like, are they bringing the dungeons back? Are they bringing back that traditional Zelda flair that I personally love? Regardless, this game will be great. But will it be like Brit's game of the year material?
Will you stop making my weapons break down?
I don't want to see any trees.
I mean, that's a very valid point, because if it's just more Breath of the Wild, you weren't really jazzed about Breath of the Wild as a game. Obviously, we all agreed that it deserved its accolades for a variety of reasons. But when it comes to your
personal,
almost infinite fandom for The Legend of Zelda, it didn't quite turn the crank you were hoping for.
It did not blow up my skirt.
Yeah. Well, a lot to look forward to in 2020 for sure. And if you guys missed our most anticipated games of 2020, that episode
gonna be yours. That's my guess.
We'll see.
My guess.
My only concern is that game will be too much.
Too fluff. Too much fluff.
And I will fizzle out.
Yeah.
It is a concern for
me. That's fair.
I love that I like tried to do an outro and you guys were like, actually, let's talk again about how Simer's not going to like Cyberpunk.
That was me, because I did not put in my thing for Simer. I did not put in my bid, and I didn't want to get going. You know, there's like 10 people still listening 2.5 hours into this. It's fine.
It's true. Just 10 of you still listening.
You'll still land that ending. You
thanks,
got this.
You 10 people.
But the 10 of you that are still listening, we would love to know, what is your predicted game of the year? And also, what was your personal game of the year for 2019? I think it's always fascinating to hear what people really gravitated towards, and not what you thought was the critical winner or what should have won, but what meant the most to you in 2019. Leave us a comment in the YouTube video. Send us a tweet to whatsgood_games. Write us an email at contact@whatsgoodgames.com. Or you can always go to patreon.com/whatsgoodgames and leave us a post there. Thank you so much for supporting everything that we do here. We had a fantastic 2019, and we can't be more excited to show you guys what we're planning to do in our new studio for 2020. So many cool people that are in the queue to be on the show that are here in the Los Angeles area. It's going to be wild. We love you guys. Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll see you next week.